Mr. Smalley, do you believe that abortion is moral?
Oh, boy. I'm glad I'm debating him instead of you.
Welcome to Apologetics Live. We're here to answer your questions and challenges about God and the Bible. Meet your hosts from Striving for Eternity Ministries, Andrew Rappaport, Dr. Anthony Silvestro, and Pastor Justin Pierce.
That's right. We are live. Anthony, Justin, what do you think about that intro?
Oh, cool, man. I didn't know that. That's, hey, I like that. Intro. Thank you.
Yeah, got that. We have a second version of it. We see which one you like better. We have this one as well.
Welcome to Apologetics Live. To answer your questions, meet your hosts from Striving for Eternity Ministries, Andrew Rappaport, Dr. Anthony Silvestro, and Pastor Justin Pierce.
I like both of them. Yeah, I like them both.
So we can use different ones at different times. So some new ones for us.
Wow, that's cool.
I told you I had a little surprise for you. But first thing, before we trigger Anthony, what we do on this show, if I say something wrong, we do corrections first thing. So let me start off with a correction from last week. I mixed up two people when I talked about Alan Miracle. I mentioned I had met him. That was actually Dustin Germain that I had the face-to-face conversation with. So doesn't change the fact that I still will not be debating Alan Miracle because of past examples he's displayed of just not being honest with stuff. But so that won't change, but wanted to correct that. So, Anthony, it's time to trigger you, you know, really quick before we bring our guest in. But I don't know if you saw the news that the Democrats decided that they don't want to release the findings of the origins of the coronavirus.
Why not?
It's probably because, Anthony, it came from a bat, right?
Yeah, this is like the worst secret of all time. I mean, really, this is so ridiculous right now. How many geneticists is it going to take for people to understand this was a lab-made virus? Emails. I mean, this is absolutely unbelievable. But I don't want to go too far into this because we have a guest on that I really want to be able to get to here soon.
Okay, I got to ask though, did you guys see the Fouts get destroyed there in front of Paul?
Yeah, Dr. Paul and Dr. Fauci, that was very interesting.
One who actually practices as a doctor or did, and the other one who never really practices as a doctor is just a researcher.
Yeah, yeah. So,
Drew says, what color is the sky in your world?
So I think that some of the things, I should welcome everyone. This is Apologetics Live. We jumped right in, which we usually don't do, but welcome to Apologetics Live. If you guys have any questions, we can answer any question you have about God and the Bible. You doubt that, just join us any Thursday night, 8 to 10 Eastern time. Go to apologeticslive.com. Click on the duck icon. That's how you join. And we'll say hello to Cynthia here in Ohio. She's saying hi from Ohio. Okay, so Justin Pierce, by the way, is already saying he's putting this in the comments. My back hurts. I need a my pillow. Just so people realize, Anthony, it's not you or I putting that out. Okay,
that's me.
I already have a my pillow, so you know. But
maybe we should do a GoFundMe for Justin to get a.
I've got two of them, so I was just throwing it out there. Somebody put up here. Let's get context. Somebody put up here. I am back, and I said,
you can't even find your
back. And KT says, your back hurts? And that's what I said.
Oh, okay. There's some context. So, yes.
Context.
Anthony is back. It is nice to have him back. And so, you know, it's been probably, almost 2 months?
It's probably been closer to 3 months since I've been on. It's been a long sabbatical. There's just been a lot in life, you know, between our travels together and teaching and, you know.
But Justin, it's good to know he doesn't actually go back and listen. So he didn't get all of the insults and things that have gone on while he was gone. So that's probably a good thing.
I just ignore it.
You did a revival, right?
We did a revival in Colorado. That was fantastic.
I enjoyed
a great time out there.
Did you get arrested?
No. So, okay. So you asked the question.
Yeah.
What happened was the first night we did the revival, we had, we had a great night. It was all rainy. It was crazy, but a good amount of people showed up. And then the next morning, the private landowner whose ranch we were hosting this on, that anybody could come on to, the private landowner gets a visit from the sheriff who says that we're serving you with a cease and desist order. And that cease and desist order said you must stop immediately and not do this anymore. So we spent some time talking with each other and contacted a lawyer that was close by. And basically we said, you know what, the show must go on. And we went out there the next night and did it again. And it turned out to be nothing. So the police never came, and we were able to have all four nights of the tent revival. That was really cool. Here's what's really cool about all this stuff too, is we on Saturday morning, we said, you know what, we're not getting all the people on the unbelievers we want to come to this tent revival here. And, you know, Pastor Ralph Hull, who put this on, had told us all along that this is a really hard area, witchcraft, false religion, false gospels, and then just a lot of just unbelief, a general unbelief around. So we knew it was a harder area anyway. So we decided on Saturday morning to go do the farmer's market and do some open air preaching. I drew the short straw. And
oh, so you did it based on height?
It was probably based on height. Actually, no, Austin Hetzer is a touch shorter than me. So,
really?
I started preaching, and I kid you not, we had a faster response here than any homosexual parade I've ever preached at, and a more vicious response than any homosexual parade I've ever preached at. And so within a minute to minute and a half, we had people in our faces yelling at us, screaming at us. People who are in their 70s yelling. Like they haven't moved this fast in the last 20 years of their life. And all of a sudden, they're there shaking their fingers, people grabbing at me. It was incredible. And, you know, I just kept preaching. Mike Stockwell was there. He could, you know, he's a big guy. He could block two people at the same time and whatnot. But it was absolutely incredible. We ended up preaching for maybe 15 to 17 minutes, or I ended up preaching before the police came, who were called on us. And the police basically said, you can continue to preach, you just can't use the speaker, which infuriated the farmers market people even more, because they were hoping we were going to get shut down completely. And so the police officer said is, you can go all throughout here, actually, if you want. We were nice. We were on the outside of this.
Oh, that's great.
You can walk anywhere in these streets, even though they have a permit. It's public access.
Yeah.
So we could have gone in the middle and preached just without a speaker.
Oh, that's great.
We decided not to. We handed out tracts after that and then just talked to people. But it showed exactly why this town needed a tent revival.
Yeah.
So we had a great time there.
Well, for folks, by the way, there was a comment here from KT. Anthony needs pillows for teeth that he works on. I guess that's
that would
patients.
Be a good idea if he would come up with these little tooth pillows for the baby teeth you can give to kids when
there you go.
Maybe adults too. I don't know.
Yeah. So to kind of set up Anthony before you introduce our guest, that the intro that I played before that little clip with me and David Smalley, that was a debate that Matt Slick was debating David Smalley on morality, whether the Christian God is moral. Now, David knew what was coming because we had already talked about my views on the issue of abortion, because his whole argument was about the slavery and slavery. He was trying to argue slavery is immoral, and because slavery is immoral, God endorses slavery, that makes God immoral. So the reason I asked the question about abortion is because if you were here 2 weeks ago when we had Pastor Darren on talking about abolitionism, we talked about this, and we ended up saying how my view is that this is an ownership issue. It's no different than slavery, different maybe in the sense that slavery doesn't always end in murder, and this does. And so David Smalley did not want, that's why he said he'd rather debate Matt Slick than me, because he knew, I mean, when I asked that question, there was three tables of atheists that went, ooh, because they knew there really isn't an answer. After everything he had done in arguing for the issue of slavery being immoral, and that atheism is more moral than Christianity because it doesn't believe in slavery, I brought up the abortion issue. And he knew, because of our conversation before that, that he had no answer for that, because that locked him in, because the whole issue of abortion is an ownership issue. There is no difference between saying, this is my body and this is my property. And that's an argument, folks, that to use when people sit here and try to understand this. Why you know, are we against it? I always try to argue with people. I argue for slavery until they start to say it's wrong to say you own another human being. And once you get them there, you just ask, what's the difference between this is my body and this is my property? There is none.
Yeah, that's right.
So with that, Anthony, I'm going to let you introduce our guest. And I don't know if you want us to go backstage while or not?
No, you guys can be here the whole time. Absolutely. So as an intro, I want to share a little bit of my heart in this issue and why I really have wanted to do this for a while. And it's because of this. I have been one of those Christians for quite some time who was pro-life, and I thought I was doing the right thing being pro-life. I didn't understand the nuances and the problems with the pro-life movement versus what the abolition movement is. But I also have to say this, is that, you know, with some of the things we've seen with AHA over the years, in my mind, it was a terrible organization overall. I can't say everybody, but it seemed like most of the people in this movement were unchurched nomads who did nothing but criticize Christians rather than actually educate them properly and treat people with respect. You know, watching picketing at churches and picketing at conferences, of which we were at a number of them, I just thought was not the right way to go. And so it actually turned people like me against AHA and therefore against an abolitionist movement, without ever having to or without ever wanting to look into what abolitionism actually was. And so it's only been in the last couple of years that I've really started to understand this position a lot more. I've asked a lot of questions, even very recently, in terms of abolitionism. And
Anthony, let me butt in just to say this, yeah, is for anyone who's watching this tonight and hasn't seen 2 weeks ago with Pastor Darren, please go back and watch that, because we've had strong views on this show against AHA from years ago, and we corrected that with, you know, there seems to have been changes that they've made, things that we criticize that they're not doing anymore. And I'll just mention this, as if there's anybody who's been against the movement, you have to recognize that people can change. So don't you know, you always have to reevaluate with new information. And that's what we did. And that's why before bringing our guest on tonight, 2 weeks ago, we wanted to first address that issue that we've had. So if you haven't seen that from 2 weeks ago, go back and watch the episode on abolitionism from 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so that was a good lead-in show for what we're going to be doing tonight. So I very much appreciated that. I listened to most of it. I couldn't be on that week. But so our guest tonight, Sarah Cleveland, is somebody that I had the pleasure of meeting a little over a year ago now. So she is a fellow freedom fighter here in Ohio. And I met her down at one of the events we were down at in Columbus in fighting against the lockdowns that were just starting here.
That was where you wanted to walk around without masks, right?
And with guns.
That's right.
You know. So we were down there and protesting what was going on with our governor, legislature, and whatnot. There were several politicians on her side, lots of people on her side. And that's where I got a chance to just meet Sarah briefly and have since then gotten to know her a little bit more as time's gone on, and defy tyrants. Sarah, I'm sure she's laughing in the background on that. But so basically with Sarah, I knew of her position of abolitionism. And very recently I got to ask her a few questions because I've been tapped to speak against abortion in one of the other ministries I speak for with Mike Riddle and Creation Training Initiative. And so I wanted to really button up arguments completely so that I knew how to answer every objection out there in terms of abortion, pro-life movement things. And so I was able to ask Sarah some of those questions. And I thought that for our viewers, it would be a really cool thing to have her on the show with her expertise to be able to walk through all of these things. for everybody here to be able to talk about what abolitionism actually is. And so for us to forget about the AHA of old and the bad connotations of abolitionism and understand what abolitionism actually is today. And why I believe every Christian needs to get behind the movement, even if you don't agree with some of the people that have been in the movement in the past. And so having said all that, I'm going to read Sarah's little bio here as we bring her on. Sarah Cleveland's a nationally registered sonographer since 2004. She has worked in one of Ohio's largest hospitals and small doctor's offices alike, scanning thousands of patients. She speaks on the dangerous and unbiblical methods of the pro-life movement and how its regulatory bills fail practically in the clinical setting, still allowing countless babies to die by the hands of their parents. She's testified twice against the heartbeat bill in Ohio, assisted with statewide campaigns to have abolition a top priority on candidates' platforms, speaks at churches and homeschool groups, and ministers on campuses and outside abortion mills. She is a Christ follower, former foster parent and advocate of massive DJFS and CPS reform, homeschool advocate, mother of five wonderful children and wife to Aaron. She currently resides in rural central Ohio. So on that, I would like to welcome on Sarah to the show.
Yeah, I don't know. Are you guys seeing that her screen is all black?
Yep, it's out.
Oh, yeah.
It is out. It was not out before.
We can see her.
Can
in
you
the,
hear me?
We hear you fine.
But we can hear you.
That
you
is
can hear me?
Weird.
It says my camera's on.
Yeah.
So
it worked fine before we went live. Of course.
It took me off and...
Let's see.
Wow.
Yeah, that is so strange.
Well, because I see her. Guys. I haven't changed anything on my screen, so
yeah.
Let me. Can I somehow like log all the way off and come back on? Would you like me
to
try that?
We could try that.
Yeah. Why don't
you
we
guys
try
just
that?
Hold the line until I pop back on here?
Yeah,
absolutely. We'll be here.
All right.
So sorry about that, folks. The technology is what technology is. It's wonderful when it works, and only when it works.
You guys got it.
It was Anthony's fault. It was all
sure it was because electronics don't do well in my hand unless it has to do with dental equipment.
Okay. So. Looks like she turned her camera off though, and it's spinning. So maybe it's coming back on.
Oh, there we go.
There we go. Okay.
You know what I did? I closed my laptop, my Chromebook screen, and then I just flipped it back up. And there we go.
Okay. Good.
Okay. Yeah.
Perfect. All right. So
I don't know why that works, but.
So now, for folks to know, I'm going to put this banner up. This is the, you know, freethestates.org is the organization you're with. Let folks know about that as well.
Sure. Yeah. And actually, I know we have 2 hours. I have a lot to talk about. Anybody who knows me know I can talk about this all day long.
Well, just so you know, Sarah, there is something called Anthony time on our show.
Okay, so we've muted Anthony now. And so we won't discuss this. So Anthony time, Sarah, is when I was moving and Anthony came in to host. Every time Anthony hosted, because he can always talk a lot. Basically, what happens is he just goes over the two-hour mark, and people start to ask for Anthony time. So he will let you go longer. So don't worry.
Okay. Or just draw me in, or tell me when it's time to wrap up. But this is good stuff, and it's important stuff. So sometimes it's hard to just.
I agree, Drew Vanuta. Yeah. Everyone loves Anthony time. That is absolutely true. Everyone except Andrew and Justin.
The only problem is Drew's a heretic, so he can say whatever he wants.
Look, you know, the only reason there's certain technical reasons that I don't like the Anthony time. There's the 2 hour window does prevent it from our backups of, you know, we actually have because we anticipate that YouTube will eventually take us down like Twitter did. And so any videos that go over 2 hours do not get automatically synced to our library or Odyssey, which is a blockchain with that, so they can't take it down, which is nice. However, the it's not because I'm old, Melissa. Melissa says it's because Andrew's old.
Yeah.
The simple thing is, I can rest assured. I can't speak for Sarah, but I'm going to rest assured that I may be the oldest one here. But I know that these others, at least the other two guys, can't run a race with me Melissa. I do a half marathon a day. I'd like to see either one of them just do a half marathon. Actually, no, a quarter marathon. I'd like to see.
Okay. Well, I grapple, so.
Oh, you know, well, now, hey, that.
If you know jiu-jitsu.
I love that, too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know that these two don't. So, see, you know, either way, I may look old, Melissa, but I still roll with, you know, teenagers and 20-year-olds and submit them. So,
good deal.
Yeah. Right. Well, enough about you, Andrew. So,
yeah,
we have a real guest on today. So Sarah, thank you for being on.
Sure, and, of course.
Can you tell everyone kind of what your background is as a sonographer and kind of what you do? And
yes, sure, I can do that. And then I actually do want to go back to your introduction and actually address the AHA thing, if we can get around to that, because I think that that's important to touch on. I'll be happy to answer questions about that as well. And people might be messaging in about that. So it's always weird to kind of talk about myself, because I am always like, I'm nobody, right? Like the Lord has shown me things, and it's been one of those things where I'm like, man, if only people could see what I've seen. And so my role and what I've just tried to do, just using Facebook as a platform, and more people have been following my page. I'm like, where are all these people coming from? It's not because I'm asking for it. It's just because people are hungry for this information. And where we were talking about before the podcast even started, when we were just talking amongst ourselves, is, you know, we can look at this whole situation with the lockdowns and tyranny, all this kind of stuff, be like all depressed and everything. But there's been a lot of good to come out of this. And people are hungry to see, like, what else is there? What else am I missing? What else have I been lied to about? And a lot of the things, like the pro-life movement, have been running some scams, guys. I don't know how else to say it. It's not gospel-based. It's not really fundamentally Christian. And so part of abolitionism is exposing that and kind of contrasting historical and biblical abolitionism versus the secular pro-life movement over the last 48 years. So for me, how I got involved in this is, well, my background, first of all, you asked me what that was. I'm an RDMS. It's a registered diagnostic medical sonographer. It's an ultrasound tech, but I don't just take pictures. Like, I'm registered in it, nationally registered. I have been since 2004. I've worked at a large Columbus area hospital for 9 years. I've done many outpatients, worked in the ER. I've also worked at small doctor's offices, done contract work. I've trained volunteers at pregnancy centers. So that's my professional, I guess, background. And so with that, I've seen a lot of things. I've seen how pro-life bills have failed babies. I've seen how easily manipulated they are by the abortion industry, and just kind of the games that have been played out. And I was only planning on staying at my one job for 2 years. That's the contract I was under, and going along and doing some other things. But I just felt led to be there for 9 years because I saw just so much. And that's kind of like it in a nutshell. I have done other things. I have been, you know, outside abortion, males trying to rescue babies, done campus ministry, talked to people outside high schools, you know, the bus line downtown at the state house where people come off the bus and just hand out tracts and information, and just been, you know, just a person for people to talk to, and done outreach with other organizations. I'm a huge homeschool advocate. I mean, we can't say how bad the government is and how much we've been lied to, and say how dangerous it is, and then put our kids in that environment, you know? So that's another thing that I'm really passionate about. And that all really goes into this attack on the family and attack on our children. And it can all really be tied in together. So I advocate for a lot of things. I guess I could go on and on, but those are a couple of things that I find really important.
Well, we got a question that came in from Chris. Chris has a question. He says, is Free the States essentially AHA rebranded minus the bad eschatology from years ago? So that ecclesiology, sorry. So that opens it up for you.
There we go. Okay. So I know the guys. If there's a podcast called the Liberator Podcast, it's run by Russell Hunter, James Silberman, and Sam. And It's not. And the short answer is it's not a rebrand. It's actually a legit lobbying organization that works with legislatures and legislators like senators at the state level and local level too, to further the movement of abolition. And it does do outreach as well. I want to clarify really what AHA, let me turn off my phone here, what AHA was. I think people have a misunderstanding of what AHA was. Some people ask me, Sam doesn't have a right last name. Of course, yes, it's Sam Riley. And actually, Sam and James actually came out of the pro-life movement. They were affiliated with a pro-life organization that supported the regulation of abortion and came out of that, even though they probably wouldn't say that. That's ultimately what a lot of these organizations do. They support iniquitous decrees and ungodly or bills. So they came out of that. So Free the States is not like associated with AHA because there was no, I know people say the AHA, but AHA, it stands for people who don't know, it's a Facebook page. It's called Abolish Human Abortion. We did have a website and that's still up, abolishhumanabortion.com. And you can look through it. It has the gospel message on it. It has a lot of great information, just tons of really good stuff, tons of great literature and graphics that you can share and things like that. So I encourage you guys to check that out too. So what the gentlemen here are talking about is years ago, there's, I want to say like infighting, but just that at the start of abolitionism, at the start of the recognition of abolitionism, there's a Facebook page called AHA came up and we have shirts I'm actually wearing right now. I don't know if you guys are going to like this, but oh, wait. Uh-oh. It's on my sleeve.
I let your picture slide through.
Okay.
Before. It was on your picture. Yeah.
So it's just a symbol means abolish human abortion is really what that it means. It's not like a slogan, anything like that. It's not like I'm a member of some group. I'm just, I am a Christian and I subscribe to the abolitionist ideology because it's a Christian based view. It doesn't have anything to do with somebody behaving badly or whatever. So when you're saying, you know, we need to get on board with abolitionism despite what these other people are doing, isn't that what Christianity is like? There's some Christians that do stupid things and act like jerks sometimes, but we never say the ideology or the faith, the religion, the relationship with the Lord is null and void because Christians are misrepresenting. Right. So abolitionism is the same way. And you may have disagreed with some people who call themselves abolitionism, but that doesn't negate the movement and the ideology.
Yeah,
so it's not a rebrand.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Sarah, on that. And that's why one of the reasons why I wanted to do this show is because AHA left a bad taste in a lot of Christians' mouths. Yeah.
Sure.
And it soured the name abolitionism, sadly.
Yeah, and there's a difference between AHA and abolitionism in the sense that, I mean, AHA, I know, and Sarah, you even kind of said it's a Facebook page. It's an organization. I know they deny that, but I actually had someone after the show 2 weeks ago who told me I'm wrong on that. It's just an ideology. Well, that sounds a lot like Antifa. It's an actual organization that's incorporated, but they say they're an ideology. I have the documents from, you know, of their organization. I have their bylaws that they have, you know, where they said to use the logo, you had to be a member of, you know, one of the local groups that then is part of the overarching group. And so it was an organization. It was funny because when someone was like, you don't have that documentation. So I released it and it was like, you manufactured that.
Yeah.
there was definitely, you know, some things that we wrote up in conferences where we got together to say, okay, when we say this, what do we mean? Of course, we had to have like definitions when we use terms. You always have to define terms.
Yeah, but so an organization.
Church repent. What do we mean by abolitionism? What do we mean by these things? You know, what do we mean by even murder and all those things? So, of course, there was things that were written down and we had conferences and things like that. But there was no, and I'm just speaking for my knowledge and what I was involved in. So that's all I can say. And I do know most of these guys is, and I don't know most abolitionism or abolitionists because abolitionism has spread so much. There's no way that I can know everybody. And that's a wonderful thing, right?
Yeah.
So there was abolitionist societies. And basically the idea behind that was we didn't want it to be like event driven, like wait to do a mission you know, twice a year and all get together. We wanted, you know, Christians to get together with the specific goal in mind to do outreach on this issue, gospel-centered evangelism, talking about abortion and the evil that it is in our culture. So we had what's called abolitionist societies. But for me, I didn't make anybody sign. It was just like, come with us. We would have signs and literature and gospel tracts. And it, so for me, it was never really formal. But of course, as an organization, that organization, it means you have to be organized. So we were organized in what we wanted to do. But I never made anybody pay me anything like that. It was just, hey, we're Christians. Babies are being murdered. Yeah. We need to do something about this.
And one of the things, I know there's some people that are saying, you know, in comments here saying, you know, I would avoid AHA. You know, one of the things we dealt with 2 weeks ago, and we want to move on from this, but we dealt with this 2 weeks ago. That's why we dealt with it 2 weeks ago, so that when we have, you know, Sarah on, we're not focused on that. But, you know, there was, and you said infighting, there was. We dealt with that 2 weeks ago on the show. If you need more, we go through some of that, the infighting. We talked about that, some of the things that had gone on. And I had said then, and I'll say now, I'm glad that we have moved past the infighting, the turf wars that I kind of saw them as. Yeah. And we have moved on to, okay, now let's actually deal with the issues.
Let's get to, right, okay? Let's get down to it.
Yeah,
right.
Because, you know, abolitionism is rooted in the idea of ending, not slowing down, but ending abortion. Now, I take it in a broader sense, because I think it's ending of all human ownership. So it's not just so for me, that includes human trafficking, slavery of any kind where there's an ownership component of it. That's all included in that. So, you know,
so yeah, if I could just jump. Yeah. So the ideology, and I'm so glad that you guys have it on and, you know, looked into it. Like when Dr. Phil Silvestro said, it's like, you know, if you have a bad experience with somebody and ideology, you just turned off to it. But it's like those little things that keep saying, well, I really need to look into this. Like, what really are they saying? What's going on here? And so I just really appreciate you guys taking the time to answer questions and look into things. I think that takes a lot. And a lot of people have come forward. I mean, what the work that, you know, Jeff Durbin and John Speed and BAM and all this work and the groups that are just, you know, agreeing on the essentials and like, what do we have to do? And interviewing pro-life leaders and doing all these documentaries and interviews with the pro-life movement and actually getting down to the bottom of this has been just such a blessing. Just reconciliation and all those things. So, the questions I was asked before about, you know, the pro-life movement, and even I think there's misconceptions that, so over the last 48 years, that it's really done a lot to end abortion, even though we have still a million babies a year being murdered in this country. It really hasn't. I want to kind of dispel that misconception right now. It's not really even slowing down abortion. It's not. It's regulating it, and we will never abolish something evil by regulating it. What it's done is told people how, when, and where we can still murder babies, but not actually said stop murdering babies. And so we understand that this isn't a snap of our fingers thing that's going to just automatically be done. We understand that. But when you have legislation on the table, SB 13 out of Oklahoma is a perfect example. They had a ton of pro-life legislation that, and one of the most popular ones right now is the heartbeat bill. The heartbeat bill is on the table, some other regulatory bills, and then we have an abolition bill. And what legislators are going to do, our senators and our representatives are going to do, they're always going to take the easy route, right? They're going to say, well, how can I please the most people and still consider myself pro-life and all this stuff? If we say, well, we're going to support all of this, do all of the plays, we're never going to get to abolition because they're going to support the weakest bill that they have available to them. Most legislatures will do that. And so until you have like a Wilberforce somewhere, like Senator Joseph Silk, for example, to come up to say, no more, we can't do this. States have a right. That's why we have a website called freethestates.org. States do have a constitutional right, an obligation to run their own states. We don't have to wait for, like, D.C. is pretty much a lost cause. I don't know if you guys agree with me on that, but it's like states are where it is. We have the obligation and the duty to protect children within our own jurisdiction, within our own states, and we do have that. You can introduce a bill to become a law to criminalize abortion. And what it does is it levels the playing field. It's equal protection. It's actually recognizing all human beings as equal from the moment of conception, which we know that they are. God's word says that they are. The medical community knows that they are human beings, even if they're small, even if they're in their mother's womb. We all know this. The question now is, for the pro aborts, they say, well, it's in my body. I'm going to do what I want. They don't even say it's just a clump of cells anymore. We're beyond that. Right? We're beyond that. If you go, anybody goes outside an abortion facility or does evangelism and talks about this abortion issue, it's a very, I don't want to say it. They recognize that. They say, yes, it's my third blankety blank abortion. I'm going to do what I want. I'll kill this baby if I want. We're beyond that. A lot of people going in to kill their babies have that attitude and they don't deny what they're doing.
And a lot of the evil politicians do too. I mean, I was horrified a few years ago in New York when they were considering abortions, what, up to a week after birth? I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
We're not winning. The pro-life movement, they keep saying we're winning. Just send us more money. Or if we get this Supreme Court justice in, or we do this or do that. Like, you know how many times we've had a pro-life Republican majority at a state level or at a federal level or in the courts, and we haven't abolished abortion and we haven't overturned Roe? Bradley Pierce, if you know him, he's a lawyer out of Texas. He does a brilliant rundowns of all this stuff, of how every time, you know, we have President Bush and we had this, you know, president appoint this judge and this judge, and they shuffle things around and nothing ever changes. We don't have to wait for Roe versus Wade to be overturned to protect babies in our states now. That's a misconception. That's been a failed strategy, and we don't need that because it's an unconstitutional court opinion. It's not a law. They don't make laws, and we don't have to abide by it. And this is what I said in my when I was testifying as an interested party against the heartbeat bill here in Ohio 2 years ago. I said that in my testimony when I was asked about it. They're like, well, what about Roe? I'm like, well, what about it? I mean, we can defy that. We can and should. Just like they were in the abolitionists of slavery in that movement, they defied federal law all the time. The fanatical Christians were the ones that were doing the Underground Railroad. They were the ones standing up against this stuff. It wasn't the majority of the churches even. Right. So you think about abolitionists now and like the nominal kind of I'm pro-life, but I don't really know kind of churches. Like, we seem fanatical. But you know, what's crazy to me is that any Christian or just could stand by and not be just horrified that literal babies are actually being murdered. It's not like a hypothetical baby or whatever. Like, these are literal bodies being literally murdered by the thousands every day in this country. And so when you talk about church repent and you talk about all those things that kind of is like, I don't really, those tactics and stuff. And again, I respect that. We don't have to get into that because you've addressed that. But the heart of it was just the desperation and the pleading to go to other Christians to say, help us, help us. Right? I mean,
one of the problems that we have is we don't teach history anymore in school. Yeah. Right. So when we say we're teaching about American history with slavery, really what they focus on is CRT. Right, critical racism theory. They're not really teaching history, although now they say they don't teach critical race theory. They're teaching history. Oh, so it's the same thing you're teaching. The content doesn't change. We're just going to change the label, but because that got a negative term, right? But but the reality is, when you look at the history of abolition in this country, especially, you saw some of it in England, but more so in this country, you saw some of the same things that we have now. There were plenty of people that you had Christians who were slave owners and saying, well, hey, as long as I treat my slave well, it's not a problem. I'm going to be a good slave owner. I'm going to treat them well, but I'm still going to own them. Well, you still have that problem. Then you had those in the North that were saying, well, we're against slavery, but I mean, we can't do anything about it. That's no different than the people that are saying, well, I'm against abortion, but I mean, hey, it's what can we do about it?
Yeah.
And then you had those that were actually, actively trying to say, let's try to, get slaves, free them, get them up to Canada, get them to freedom, to fight, the legislature to try to change the laws. This is what abolitionism is. And for people who think, well, this is so crazy, well, the reality is that's what everyone thought when it was the slavery was the issue too.
They thought it would never end. This is just the way it is. We'll never end it. And just to have that attitude. I mean, I'm sure you have a different attitude. If you're the one being enslaved, you would hope that there would be some fanatical Christians trying to rescue you and do what it takes to get you out of slavery. I mean, you know, being the horrible things that happened. And it's just the word of God. You know, these are image bearers and they should be free men and free women and free families. And so with the babies, we hear excuses all day long about why, you know, of course, I would never do it. And yes, it is a killing of a baby. But I know some Christians that are even too soft with it, like they won't call it even murder because they say it hurts people's feelings. Or I know women who have had abortions and how would they feel about it? And if we understand the gospel and we're really talking about sin and we know that Jesus can forgive the sin of abortion, why would we not use these terms? Why would we not talk about this and say that, yes, it is murder. We need to admit to that and talk about this and repent. And Jesus can forgive even that. Like, this is such a huge opportunity to talk to women and men and everybody that's been involved in it, because it's not just the women who've had them, it's people who have encouraged them, people who have driven them. This affects just about everything in our society, in our life. It affects relationships down the road, and we need to talk about it, and we need to be using the right words and the right terminology when it comes to this. We have to look at these babies as equals. If we knew that newborns were being murdered by the thousands, by 3,000 plus, we don't even know how many really it is, every day. I mean, that should be all over the news. We should be, you know, upset, to say the least, about that. So why aren't we, if a six-month-old baby had his arms being torn apart or his skull crushed, not to be graphic with my words, but this is what's happening, or mutilated to death, a six-month-old out of the womb, why aren't we equally as horrified that this is happening to babies 6 months old in the womb or 6 weeks old in the womb? Maybe we need to do a heart check ourselves to say, you know, are we being ageist? Are we actually not treating them as equal? Do we see them as differently, as different? And so once you start seeing these babies as equal to born babies and that there is no difference, I think that wakes a lot of people up. You know, we need to make that connection that these are literal babies being killed.
Yeah, you know, I would have hoped that the Dalyden videos and that one, I can't remember the doctor's name, but he was doing on Facebook, he was putting those videos out. They're cartoon style, but showing how the babies get dismembered.
Dr. Levitano, I believe.
Levitano, that's it. Showing those videos. I think, I've known about the evils of abortion for a long time, but it was when some of those videos started coming out that it really hit a whole lot harder for me. You know, just the reality that you got a baby being literally ripped and torn apart. And that there's these people that are abortionists are championing this thing. They're laughing about it. I mean, it's unbelievable.
This is the point at which we're in. This is what I'm saying. When you get emails, and I sign up for this stuff, I email notifications on pro-life groups and stuff like this. We're winning. We just need $100 more or put this judge in and stuff. And this has been going on for like years. And I'm like going, we're clearly not winning. What the pro-life movement has done has perpetuated it. They'll say, well, look at these numbers, you know, Ohio Right to Life. Here I'm in Ohio. Ohio Right to Life will say, okay, we passed this Born Alive Infant Protection Act, or we passed a 20-week ban or something like that. And they put this out and we say that that's a win. And so we have to break down what is actually happening. So then like the next year they'll say, because I don't know if everybody knows, probably don't, but you can go on every state's Department of Health website and look at statistics. So abortion facilities are supposed to report their numbers, the age of the baby at the time of the death, the age of the mother at the time of the abortion, the county in which the mother lived, her ethnicity, her level of education. All of these numbers, I know it's on the Ohio Department of Health website and it's on other states' websites too. You can actually click on that and type in the word abortion and look at all these. You have to remember that these are the abortion facilities reporting these numbers. This is the best information that we have. It's probably underreported. But when we're going to that and they pass this legislation to say that a baby's 20 weeks and over, you know, there's this 20-week abortion ban. Well, you hear the word ban and you think, okay, everything at 20 weeks, done, cut off. People don't realize that there are exceptions as big as Texas in this thing, that there are holes. There's always exceptions. So it really doesn't protect babies. So I'll just use this as an example. And so if you look at 1 year, and I don't have it in front of me, but if you look at from 1 year to the next when this was supposedly when it was passed, those numbers did go down a little bit. So it was something like 800 1 year and of babies after 20 weeks being murdered in Ohio with the permission of our legislature here. And then like the next year went down to like 500. Which you're like, yay, we saved 300 babies. First of all, that just proves it's not a ban because it wasn't zero, right? We still have hundreds of babies after that time that were being murdered. And so it went down. You're like, well, we saved 300 babies. If we just save one, then it's worth it. But here's the problem with this. It's broken down by categories, by age, for example. So like between 20 and 22 weeks or 22 and 25 weeks. When we went down like 300 numbers, what happened for the 17 to 19 week age bracket? It went up. They just did it a week sooner. We didn't save any babies. They just did it a week sooner. They just got in there. Plus, here's another thing. An ultrasound tech, ultrasound is highly, it's operator dependent. So you can manipulate it very, very easily. So if you have your calipers that are measuring around the baby's belly age.
Hold on 1 second, yeah. Sarah. So yeah. I have like all these questions prepared and you're just like going right through them all.
I
right
get
now.
Like so bad. Okay.
Which is great.
Reel me in.
Yeah. But I want to reel you in on this because this is an important concept, right?
Okay.
And I'm going to lay a quick story out for you. My wife and I, and son stayed with some friends in Florida back in March. And older Christian folks. And she's worked with the anti-abortion industry in Christianity. And she's really proud of the work that they've done with their traveling ultrasound units.
Mm. Yeah.
We know about the problems with them. That's kind of what I wanted to lay out because they're championing. They're saying we're saving all kinds of babies with these ultrasounds. And we love the idea of heartbeat bills and all this kind of stuff. And so my wife and I knew better at that point. And so my wife sent her a video of Jeff Durbin speaking against this stuff. And after that, she stopped talking to us.
Oh no.
But,
yeah.
So I want you to now speak to this in why is it that heartbeat bills don't actually work? Why is it these ultrasound clinics are highly problematic? You know, when we're dumping all this kind of money into these ultrasounds that are traveling around. I know you have big problems with it and legitimate reasons why. And so I think people need to hear this.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not against ultrasound. First of all, I want to make that clear.
Right.
Ultrasound is a tool. I love it. I am an ultrasound tech. It can be used to save lives. This is the analogy that I use. It's like a gun. It's a tool, right? It's just, it just depending on who the operator is and what it's going to be used for. A gun is a tool. It can be used to save a life, protect a life in the hands of somebody good, honest, life affirming, wants to protect people. It's a wonderful thing to have. In the hands of a bad guy, it's a terrible thing to have. They will use it to murder and do horrible things with it. An ultrasound machine is the exact same way. You put it in the hands of somebody like your friend who may be a very, very good person who has great intentions, and she would of course use that machine in an effort to show the humanity of the baby and do all these things and show the profile and all these wonderful things that I get to do. That's awesome. And use it to save babies. A lot of these women who go into pregnancy centers are not necessarily, they're already soft to maybe saving their baby. And it's not the same as going inside an abortion clinic, because an abortion clinic, every single abortion clinic already has an ultrasound machine in the facility, right? It already has an ultrasound machine in the side of the facility. They're not using it to save babies. It's a tool. It's like the gun. It's in the hands of murderers. So you have an ultrasound machine that it's in the hands of people who are going to use it to do harm and bring forth death. So the machine isn't the issue. It's the operator. Who are we entrusting to run this ultrasound machine? When we pass heartbeat bills and ultrasound laws and things like that, you cannot compare these mobile units who are generally Christian people really trying to help and doing good. And I'm not against that, because I've actually done some limited training for some nurses and some other volunteers to do some limited scanning. And it is limited, but they do use them to save lives. That's not the same as putting an ultrasound machine into the hands of these people inside abortion clinics, because it is operator dependent. They're not going to show the baby the same way that I would, right? They're not going to show the profile of the baby or the human of the baby. A lot of these bills are written so it just says pregnancy. The woman has to be offered to show to see the screen. And they can make the screen look like anything. Who's to say that they're even showing them the baby or the profile? Lots of times, and I've known this, I can tell you specific things that I've witnessed inside the hospital I worked at, where women have gone to get ultrasounds at abortion mills, and then they've had complications, they've come into the ER, and then they had me as an ultrasound tech. And if that's not like, you know, just a providence, I don't know what is, but then I've been able to show them the truth and save babies in that way. But you can manipulate that ultrasound image to look like anything. And so, but it's still fulfilling the pro-life legislation. They'll say you have to look, image the fetus or look at the pregnancy. Well, you can image the placenta and that's part of the pregnancy. You could do a cross section of a leg and have it look like a little dot on the screen and it looks like nothing, but yet you're still imaging the baby. And so you're fulfilling that pro-life legislation, but being sneaky about it. You know, it's just so easy to get around all this legislation and still fulfill it and still obey it. And it's not saving babies. So,
yeah. And to be clear, I mean, I think one of the things you had said is that in a heartbeat bill, the idea is that there has to be a heartbeat, but yet an ultrasound tech can just show parts of the baby and say, oh, I don't see a heartbeat. You're okay.
Oh, easy, easy. Right. Oh yeah. And so the heartbeat bill, there's a lot to that too. And like I said, there's, that's the popular thing right now. And then what's it advertised to do? It's advertised to save babies. Like 95% of all abortions just supposed to stop under the heartbeat bill. That's what it's been advertised to do. And I look at other people's testimonies and I see these email things and I just, and that's why on my Facebook page, if anybody wants to find me, I've made lots of videos explaining it, going down through these bills line by line and showing people, look, this doesn't even criminalize abortion. First of all, it's saying that it's going to make some abortions illegal, but it doesn't even criminalize it. So, and maybe that's something, maybe I don't want to get off to a tangent right now. We can come back to, there's no criminalization part to it. The worst that can happen, and I'll talk about the heartbeat bill here in Ohio. If this actually went into effect, which actually never went into effect here in the state, and it's never gone into effect in any of the other states either, by the way, just as many babies are being murdered today as they were a year ago and 2 years ago. But there's no criminality to it. You go and murder the baby. It wasn't a murder charge. So the only person that was actually punished under these bills is the hired hitman, the hired middleman, which would be the abortionist. And the worst that can happen to him is a fine and he gets a fifth degree felony. Well, people hear the word felony and they say, well, that sounds really bad. I don't want to be a felon. Just look up what a fifth degree felony is. It's like smoking weed or writing a bad check. There's no equal justice. There's no equal protection in these bills. It's not like he's in jail for murdering a baby, which he just did. So it's not, that's one problem with the heartbeat bill. It's not, there's no real justice in it. And there's exceptions in it. There's tons of exceptions. I just encourage your viewers to really read these bills and not just listen to the talking points. Look at a bill. They're not actually very hard to understand, and they're generally not very long. It lays it out right there of the babies that are still allowed to be murdered and the exceptions. All you have to do on most of these bills is have two abortionists agree that the abortion needs to be performed. And sure enough, two physicians have agreed, even if they're abortionists, that it needs to be done with the health of the mother. And those are still in there. And a lot of these bills have actually never consulted an ultrasound tech. It's essentially an ultrasound bill. The heartbeat bills are, because how are you determining the heartbeat? It's with an ultrasound machine. Yet they've never consulted me. They've never consulted any other ultrasound techs that I've heard of, as much as I've been talking about this the last couple of years. I don't know who's writing this ultrasound legislation without actually talking to an RDMS who actually is registered and knows what it is. They're writing in a transabdominal scans only, which you can only see babies later on in pregnancy. You won't ever even see that at 6 weeks in most women. So the bill is just so poorly written that it won't save any babies, let alone 95% of them. I even have a brochure from Ohio Right to Life that stated at their legislative day banquet 2 years ago to say that they understand that it won't save babies all the way up through the first trimester because of the way it's written. It was a transabdominal, which means just on top of the belly and not an internal scan where we can see these tiny babies up close. It was written in there. So, it essentially allowed wiggle room for all first trimester babies to be aborted, which 87% of all abortions are in the first trimester. So how is it going to save 95% of all babies if it's allowing 87% of them in the first trimester plus all the other exceptions after the first trimester? The math doesn't even make sense. Wow. Are you tracking me? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Okay. I want to clarify a statistic you just threw out there. 87% of abortions occur in the first trimester. Are you including like abortification?
No, I'm not including that. That number just comes from actually the Guttmacher. I always mess up that word. It's the pro-abortion website that puts out all the statistics for the whole year, the annual statistics, the Guttmacher Institute. It's like some weird name. If you're familiar with that, that number is like the national kind of database for getting abortion information. It's about 87%.
So just by that statistics, heartbeat bills, don't matter anyway, because these are all being done so early in the process.
First of all, you're trusting murder to tell the truth, right? You're not asking me to do the ultrasound. You're trusting murder to tell the truth. And ultrasound is really highly, it's not regulated. So actually you don't have to be, I think people think that it's like a legit, really, really nice machine that you see in hospitals. And it's the same way as in the abortion facility. You can have the worst, oldest ultrasound machine and hardly see anything. You can have somebody who's not registered. You can have the secretary in the side of the abortion facility try to scan, you know, the baby. It doesn't have to be a nurse. It doesn't have to be an ultrasound tech or even a doctor to scan it. It can be anybody to scan and say, oops, I tried. I did an ultrasound. Take a poor picture, a poor image, put that in the woman's file. So like if the health department would ever come along and try to audit an abortion facility, which they don't really even do, but I'm saying if they would, how would they even know they aborted a baby anyways? There's no hard drive. We're not saving any of this information to somehow do checks and balances to say, hey, where's the full study of that pregnancy? It's gone. Once that baby's murdered and dead, how do we even know? How do we know how old the baby is? We have maybe two poor images printed off from the ultrasound machine, done from the secretary or done from somebody who doesn't know what they're doing on an old machine, put it in some woman's chart in a back file, and it's a piece of the placenta or cross section of an image. And there's no way to hold anybody accountable in these bills. What we need to do is just have a bill of total abolition, criminalize it, treat these babies as equal to born babies, and shut down these hellholes. Shut down every procedure that we allow now, even the pills that mothers take inside their homes, which is the most popular way to abort now, believe it or not. They're aborting now inside their homes.
Are you talking about RU486?
Yes. And it's going, through the first trimester. So a way to get around that is, well, so if we have a bill that just criminalizes the abortionist who does the surgical procedure, and that's written into all of these bills, what do they do to get around it? They're going to prescribe them the pills so that now there is no middleman. So now the mother is the active participant taking the poison pills and aborting her baby at home. Well, when you have these bills that are written in, there's no criminalization to the mothers. They are literally written into the bills to say that they cannot be held liable or accountable for those crimes, then we just move all the abortions at home again, and then nobody can ever be charged with it.
Yeah. So just to make things clear for everybody here, an abolitionist position is that the baby is a human being from the time of conception.
Right.
And that any type of abortion after that is absolute murder. And because it's murder, it should be criminalized both against the abortionist as well as the female, and maybe even the male that's enticing her to
anybody,
do it.
Anybody's involved in it. If we're taking a toddler and we had a driver, the mother of that toddler, hiring a hitman to do some horrible things to that child, and we have a driver who took her there, we had people who gave her money to go and do that, they're accomplices, right? We just think of born babies. So if we have a situation where they're doing that to a 5-month-old in utero baby, we have a driver, we have accomplices, we have people giving money. There's a whole network of people. Nobody should be exempt from being held accountable for their role in that baby's death. So what we're saying is, we're not saying death penalty for everybody or anything like that. What we're saying is have it be equal justice and equal protection for these babies. So if there would be a charge for a mother doing something like that to a newborn baby, have it just be equal and treat these babies equally. That's all we're saying.
Well, and this is exactly what people said when it came to the slavery issue. Mm-hmm. You don't just go after the slave owner. You go after the person that kidnapped them. You go after the person that brought them, you know, over on ships. This is the same thing. I mean, and reason I want people to see that is we now are in a society where people will see the issue of slavery and they can see, oh, yes, that's wrong. And what the abolitionists did there is good.
Yeah.
But with this issue that they've gotten comfortable with, they don't see the need for that. And yet that's exactly what the abolitionists a century plus ago dealt with as well. There's no difference here. They dealt with people that were making the same excuses as people would make today for abortion.
Yeah, it's very parallel. It's very, very much the same. We would have, just like you said earlier, we have Christians or we have people that would say, well, I would never do that myself, but that's somebody else's business. You know, their slave, their property, their business. I'm not going to interfere. You know, if they have an abortion, I disagree with it. I think it's really wrong and bad. I never would be a part of it, but it's somebody else's business. And it's not. It is all of our business. We're supposed to love our neighbor as ourselves. If our neighbor is being killed, defenseless babies, at least me and you, we can fight back, right? These are babies. Mm-hmm. We have to keep reminding ourselves of this. And, you know, that blood goes somewhere. It's innocent blood. It seeps into our ground. And we're seeing the fruit of some of that. You know, the blood cries out and we got to get this under control. We're not going to be able to save our state if we can't even protect babies.
You know, most states that I'm aware of have laws. If you kill a pregnant female, that it's, you can be charged with double murder, double homicide.
Except in New York, when they passed that law, and there's no protection for those babies, even most then. States, yeah.
So, I mean,
and that's because they realized what was happening, right? They were suddenly forced to have to deal with, oh, wait, if we do this as double murder, we're basically admitting that abortion is murder. And that's why they did that, and which is the insanity of our culture and tells you how darkened our culture is, that here when it's right in front of their face and they should recognize it, you go, okay, what are they going to do? They go, oh, you know what? Let's just ignore what's right in front of our face. And we're going to ease laws to make it worse for people, because we want to hold to our cash cow, and that's really what it comes down to. It's a cash cow, okay? For folks that don't understand the abortion industry, right? All that is a way Democrats get funding, right? They people give money for that, and then it gets right back to them. But
Republicans get funding for this too,
as well.
Like I
yeah,
said before, and they put this out there, vote for me, I'm pro life, but then they get in there, they don't actually do anything to actually stop the slaughter, and it is a big money grab.
Yeah,
and it's been going on now, and they keep saying, well, it's a step in the right direction, or, and, you know, you just can't do it all at once. I'm like, how long have you been saying this? It, literally almost 5 decades later. And what, how much does it take to say, hey, we're not, these methods are not working here, people. And every day that we delay this, more and more babies die. So the pro-life movement has been prolonging it and almost perpetuating it. Because if we had said this decades ago and just put an end to it, we wouldn't have it. Instead, it's just regulated.
Okay, so let's, this was kind of my next topic to bring up anyway, so let's talk about the pro-life movement. There's atrocities in the pro-life movement, and I would have hoped that when Abby Johnson got a big stage and started making many millions of dollars off of her movie and her stage appearances, and that she didn't want to criminalize abortion.
She's against criminalization.
Yeah, she's against she's against a lot of things I think that she should be against, right?
Right.
Well, so I think she's Roman Catholic, not Christian. A lot of people don't they forget about that fact.
Let's go ahead and make sure that one is right
That's the next set of topics here.
The pro-life movement is essentially run by the Catholic Church.
Yep. Yeah, thank you.
I agree. Sarah, I just want to point out that I'm being very good tonight and keeping my mouth shut. So I mean, I usually start talking and I never stop. So I'm just going to be pointing out.
Oh, you're fine. You're well, jump right in. Yeah.
Well, listen, there's a reason we have to keep him in the back though, because what would happen, Sarah, is he would, if we let him go, he would end up putting people to sleep. And that's why they would end up needing to get Andrew. That's why they would end up needing to get a MyPillow. So now would be a good time to do.
I have to plug the pillow. We gotta
give you know, to mention our sponsors here. So this show is put out, is sponsored by MyPillow. So if you want to get a great sleep, and I travel with my MyPillow, but I don't know, Sarah, if you've gotten the mattress topper. I love that even more than
the pillows.
No, the mattress topper is even better. So they have a sale right now with the promo code. If you use promo code SFE, you can get the 2-inch mattress topper for half off. I ended up getting the 3-inch. I don't know what the 2-inch one is like, but I know the 3-inch one. Yes, that has been the biggest thing. I've said this before, but other than my Sleep Number bed, that mattress topper, that 3-inch mattress topper, has been the biggest thing to change how I sleep. Which I don't sleep much, but I'm sleeping more with that thing because I actually enjoy sleeping now. But that is...
But if you're too comfortable, you don't get out of bed. You just, you don't want to stay in your bed.
I haven't had that problem.
I haven't had that problem. Anthony can tell you, we travel together, and he can tell you how frustrating it is sharing a room with me because I go right to bed when I go to bed, and I just get up early. And
oh, I kid you not. Andrew's like, I'm going to bed, and he's out in a second. It literally, that is, I'm honest, it's all it takes. He's out in a second, and he's out. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. It's like he can shut off his own light switch and then turn it back on a few hours later. I don't get it, but.
Yeah. You know, but the reality, though, is made here in the United States, all of the MyPillow products. I know that Chris Honhold's got the MyPillow slippers. They're too warm for him to be wearing now. But if you want to save money, support this show, you can go to MyPillow.com and use promo code SFE or call 1-800-873-0176. That's 1-800-873-0176 and use promo code SFE to get the discounts. You need to use the promo code for that. One, so that we get the support. They know that you got there through us. And two, you get those discounts. The mattress topper right now, the 2-inch one I saw today was on half price. So encourage you to do that. And then when Justin Pierce comes in and talks, you can get yourself a good sleep.
Yeah. Did you notice who was doing all the talking just now? Yeah.
Well, I'll let you do the promo code.
I tried to throw it in there, but you wouldn't let me. You just said, start talking. So, I do want to ask a question. You know, a lot of people are on here talking about, you know, the fact that, you know, that we believe in being pro-life, mm-hmm. that we want to stand for life. A lot of times there's a connotation here that people are saying, if you're pro-life, you're part of the bad group and part of the bad movement. And I know that's not what you're saying. You know, I understand that's not what you're saying.
Right.
But, you know, for those people that are in the chat and they're sitting there talking on the side and whatnot, if you're pro-choice, you're in sin and you're going to have to answer to God. So mm-hmm. let's just put it out there. If you're pro-life, you may not be a part of the wickedness of the pro-life movement. Because what mm-hmm. she's talking about is the fact that there are a lot of people that are involved in the pro-life movement that love the money more than ending the abortion industry.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, I want to clarify that. So when I say, you know, the pro-life movement, I'm talking about the people who are running the show, right? The people, the organizational top tiers who are running this, who are directing what people should do. I'm not talking about your average pro-lifer, you know, that you meet on the street and they call themselves pro-life. I'm not bashing them at all. You know, we're not pro-death. Of course, we're pro-life, but we're defining our terms. Even the term pro-life, when you talk to people, even, you know, on Facebook, I have other conversations. It's, well, you can't be pro-life if you support the death penalty. You can't be pro-life if you don't do foster care, all this kind of stuff. And it's like this general big term. And so it's almost to a lot of people lost its meaning, or it's like, what does pro-life even mean anyway? So some people just say I'm anti-abortion and just talk about that issue. And we can talk about those other ones too. But that's why I say I'm an abolitionist. It's very, very specific to abolishing abortion. And it's very specific to an ideology and movement. And it's gospel-centered. So I'm not saying that, you know, anybody who identifies as pro-life is a bad guy or anything like that. But I am saying look into the actual movement and the direction that the organizational top, and I can list organizations that any pro-life organization, really, just look at their Facebook page or look at their emails or look what they're putting on LifeSite News and all that kind of stuff. Look what they're actually celebrating as a win and look at it through different eyes and humble yourself to say, is this really a win? What are they saying and what are they doing? Has this actually ended abortion? Has this established equal protection? And are we obeying God? The Lord is very, very clear in scripture about how we're supposed to treat children. What we're supposed to do in protecting them and protecting and loving our neighbor, he's very clear on this. And this is a loving your neighbor issue. We're allowing, by regulating abortion, babies to be legally protected, legally murdered in our jurisdiction. We have accountability for that. We cannot support these laws and these legislators and these lobbyists and these organizations that are promoting such things. And so I am talking about the movement itself, and not your average pro-lifer that just identifies. I do think it's important, however, and I'll just say this, and we can go on to the next question, but I don't identify. I hate to say that because that's kind of its own thing, but I identify as an abolitionist because I'm not part of the pro-life movement. I think it's good to differentiate the different movements. And so I don't necessarily consider myself a pro-lifer. I consider myself a Christian, of course, first. And because I'm a Christian, I'm an abolitionist. I'm not a part of a movement that's going to link arms with atheists and Buddhists and all these other religions in an effort to fight abortion when it's like sinking sand. They don't even have the foundation to fight abortion in the pro-life movement. So why would I be linking my arms to failed methods and strategy? And the Lord isn't with that.
Yep. Amen. So, okay. So just to be clear, you normally wouldn't have an issue with somebody identifying as pro-life, but the problem is that when you say pro-life, it seems to automatically associate you with the pro-life movement, majorly problematic. Right. So, and that's kind of a struggle I've had. And, you know, as I said earlier in the show, I understand the abolitionist movement now. I would never have called myself an abolitionist 3-4 years ago. But today I have to, because I understand the problems in the pro-life movement. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, even my own terminology is changing for that very reason. And I want to be associated with it.
That question that just popped up, can you read that one real quick? I talk about that real.
Who put it up there?
There you go. Yeah. Can I read that?
Yes.
For KT and Jesus, I do believe that when lives are saved, that it is positive, even though we want to end it completely. All right. And I get that. Okay. Here's the tricky part. Here's what we have to understand. And I talked about this a little bit earlier. So let me elaborate.
This would be called incrementalism.
Incrementalism. Or I use the term regulationism, actually, I think is more accurate. Fair. Because abolition isn't just going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen because I'm talking about abolition now. It's not going to happen tomorrow. Or even if there's 1,000 of me, it's not going to happen tomorrow. We're going to demand abolition the entire time and be consistent and persistent in that message. And along the way, it will probably happen incrementally, but I'm not asking for increments and I'm not asking for regulationism. It may happen that way just because that's the way our judicial system and the way our culture is. It may happen in increments, but I'm not saying that I want to compromise or it to happen in increments, if that makes sense. Regulationism is what's been happening at the state level right now. And so the fact that, you know, babies, and this is what I hear, and it's a legitimate like question, and people are confused about that. They think the pro-life laws that we have now have been saving a bunch of babies. So it's better than nothing, right? You hear that. Well, it's better than nothing. And at least we can save 1,000 babies. I can't save 1,000,000, but at least I can save 1,000, or I can save 10,000 and all that. But here's the deal. So just say that we have a bill that the numbers did go down the following year, and it's attributed to a pro-life piece of legislation or something like that. The bill, you know, it reduced abortion in the state by like 10% or something. You say, well, we saved that 10%. We saved some babies. It's a good thing. But here it is. It's ingraining into society that this is still acceptable. It's ingraining into society that this is something that's never going to go away. It causes people to be complacent and apathetic and think that we're winning this war of abolition and to actually end it, when really it's just prolonging it. So every year that we've put up a new law that has, you know, chipped away here, and then like the numbers go up because they find a new method or a new way to do abortions, then they go up the next year. It's not actually like there's no steady decline of all these abortions going down. Right? There's a graph that just kind of goes up and down. So yeah, you could say, well, we just saved these babies this next year. Well, we've been saying that again for 48 years and we've saved some babies. Well, it's prolonged it to the fact that now it's year 2021 and we still have 1,000,000 babies a year. So really for the babies that we saved 5 years ago, it's really sacrificed all the babies in the years after that. Because now we continue to still have abortion because it's been regulated, when all these babies the last 5 years could have been saved if we actually just demanded and got abolition 5 years ago.
Yeah. I love how you stated that, that you are all about being an abolitionist, mm-hmm. but recognize that there's going to be incrementally, it's going to happen.
So but we don't ask for that. We don't say, hey, some of these babies we want to save and we're going to go back for these. No. It's like Moses. What did he do when he went to Pharaoh? When Pharaoh told him no the first time, did he say, okay, I'm going to go back the second time and just ask for the kids under age 5 this time? Am I just going to go ask for the women this time? He didn't come back and like start making deals, right? He said, no, he was persistent, consistent with his message, obeyed the Lord and said, no, let my people go. All of them. This is wicked. Let us go.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing with the babies.
Yeah, that is a great way to state it. So thank you for that. It changes my language now, too. Melissa here says, I guess I'm really changing my mind here because saving some is not good enough. We need to raise the bar and stop settling.
Amen.
And that's really the issue, right? Is that a true incrementalism or regulationism, as you said, is essentially settling for something mm-hmm. rather than us being persistent in what we need to accomplish.
Yeah.
So that's great. There's a question that came in. Is the trigger bill in Texas more pro-life political pandering?
Oh, yeah. For sure. So what is a trigger bill for those who don't know? So a trigger bill is, I think it was LifeSite News. That's a very popular thing to get all your pro-life news from, whatever. I know one of the headlines the other day was Governor Abbott out in Texas bans all abortion in Texas. And everybody is, people look at the headline and go, wow, abortion's banned in Texas, fantastic. Oh man, this is fantastic, this is great. And then you read the article, it says, if and when Roe versus Wade is overturned. It's a trigger bill. So it's a bill saying, if Roe versus Wade is overturned, which I don't think it's ever gonna be, a fat chance it's ever gonna be. And again, we don't need it to be overturned, but it's a bill to say, if the Supreme Court, if that judicial god that some people put up as like waiting for these justices to say, finally get permission from these men and women to actually protect babies. Once they say we can protect babies, then hey, we're going to protect babies in Texas. We're going to wait on these guys though. But look at me, I'm going to pat myself on the back and say that when they say we can, we will. And even if that would even happen, the Supreme Court Roe versus Wade is overturned and kicks it back to Texas, these bills still aren't criminalizing abortion. I don't understand how somebody can advertise these bills as saying, hey, we're going to make abortion illegal, but not make it criminal. What kind of bill? That doesn't even make sense. How can a bill make something illegal and not criminalize the people doing the act?
It'd be like robbing banks would be illegal, but not criminalizing somebody.
But then if you go do it, nothing happens to you. Okay. So it's not worth the paper it's written on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So. When you start breaking this stuff down, it's like crazy. Like when you start looking at it from a different perspective and dig a little deeper instead of the superficial, like the headlines, and you really take a step back and just be humble enough to say, man, we really haven't been doing what we need to be doing as a society, and particularly as Christians. We have the truth on our side. The Lord has already told us what we're supposed to be doing with this issue. We need to actually obey him. We can't pretend that we're smarter than God and say, well, we're going to end abortion our way and just write these bills and make exceptions and be really, heartbeat bills and ultrasound bills. They sound really good. And it sounds smart to our mind as a human being, maybe as a man, as a human being to say, this is a way to end abortion. Well, it's not. Because we're trying to outsmart the Lord in many of these ways. Well, how's that going to turn out for us? He just says, don't murder. Thou shalt not murder. And he talks about justice and establishing, just protecting children. Millstone comes to mind. There's going to be a lot of millstones.
One thing that KT brings up here is that the Supreme Court, they often shoot down any law that we try to, bring up.
Right.
And so... one thing, she actually says here that in her case, she says, I believe in both saving some and saving all. And I think that's what that you're trying to get at is that we're never settling. The settling is what the movement does that is involved with, let's make the money out of this. I know there are some pastors that, and I say pastors loosely, mm-hmm. using the term loosely. There are some pastors that are on some of these pro-life boards that are there for 20 and 30 years and 40 years. They've got, a retirement package. They have a whole system set up. They don't want to actually stop it. They want to slow it down and continue to get the funding and continue working on those things so that their career can keep going. And right. And that's highly different. That is settling. Now, yeah. what KT is talking about here is the fact that, and I think everybody is talking the same language, but make sure we don't, talk past one another. is I think what she's talking about is in working to establish these laws, you know, like she said, some have shut down abortion clinics. I know of one abortion clinic that was shut down, praise God, because the laws were forced, you know, they were pushed and they were preached and taught and they were worked for so long to get that abortion clinic shut down. And it was actually code violation laws to try to get them shut down because they were so bad, and it did get them shut down. In one case, I don't know about all of them, but I think that's what she's getting at.
Yeah, and I get that, and I want to make sure that I articulate this well, because here you cannot regulate abortion into abolition. Okay. They are opposed to each other. If you write a law that's saying we're going to protect babies after 20 weeks. A Down syndrome bill, which, by the way, saves zero babies with Down syndrome because all you don't have to. I think maybe people don't understand what it's like going in an abortion facility. You know, you don't actually have to give a reason why you're having an abortion, right? A woman can go in and it's an elective procedure. I don't have to explain to you, my boyfriend left me, I just don't want to, or whatever, I just don't want to be pregnant. You don't have to give a reason. So like a Down syndrome bill, when they say, just don't say that you're aborting the baby because the baby has Down syndrome, just don't say that. And then you can abort your baby with Down syndrome. So these laws, these regulate, they're not saving some. So this ideology, and it's kind of like, you have to detox from that. What's that?
So I can't. So it's what you're talking about here. I just typed in preterm, which is the major abortion clinic up here in the Cleveland, Ohio area that I've been at several times to preach. Others go there much more regularly than I do. But here's their pop-up that shows up on the screen as soon as you type in their website. Before you get to the website, this pop-up comes up. It says, abortion is still legal in Ohio, in big words. Mm-hmm. And then it says, yes, it is legal in Ohio to get an abortion for any reason, underlined. Under a new Ohio law, we cannot provide an abortion if we know that the reason is in whole or in part because of a fetal Down syndrome diagnosis. Preterm is open and seeing patients. Please call us with any questions or concerns.
I mean, they even know this is a joke. The pro-abortion are like, whatever. Right. Like, those are silly pro-lifers putting these laws up there again. It's a political football. Like you said, it's funding. Well, I'm going to fight the pro-lifers. I'm going to fight the pro-choicers. And we just need to get it together and say no more of this stuff. They even advertise it like in her face. They're showing all their cards. They're agreeing with what I'm saying. They know that babies can be aborted all the way through 9 months of pregnancy for any reason, Down syndrome or not, gender, that's the baby's a different gender than the mom. It doesn't matter. So they know that and they admit to that. And I just want to point out that that mill is called preterm. That just always gets me, the name of these facilities. Like,
I know.
They're just rubbing it in our face at this point. Yeah. And so what are Christians doing? I mean, we're responsible for this. We're responsible, even though we would never participate in abortion, we're responsible for our actions towards it. And what are we doing about it? And so I can't know what I know and have seen what I've seen and do nothing about it. I feel that weight. And I am obligated and convicted to share this information. And, you know, love or hate other abolitionists when they go to plead with people. And we've done pretty good in our communication and everything. But we really do see this as the evil of which it is. And babies are being murdered. So when we go to plead with other pastors and churches, you know, there is a sense of urgency here. You know, there is... And this is like a legit podcast here, so I'm not going to cry. But like, if I actually stop to think about this, it's heavy, right? And so we have to see these babies as real babies who have been abandoned by society, have been abandoned by people who claim to be pro-life, who can write bills to protect them, and they don't. And they're abandoned by their own parents. Like, these are the ultimate orphans in our society. And their bodies are being dumped in biohazard bins or flushed down the toilet or put in incinerators. And we're writing laws and patting ourselves on the back to say, well, as long as the baby has a proper burial after it's been murdered, which is one of the new pro-life laws here in Ohio that they touted, you know, as a win, that they had like this cremation act or whatever, that they didn't stop abortion, didn't say you couldn't have an abortion. But after you do it, let's just make sure that they're buried in a more humane manner. And we say that's a win, and it's wicked. And we cannot be getting behind this legislation anymore. This is not saving lives. It's perpetuating it in our culture. It's treating it as less than murder, as the evil of which it is. And it's just making people who think that maybe we are winning. So it's giving them that false sense of security or the false sense of illusion that we're winning this movement somehow of saving babies when we're not. So it's multifaceted, right? So it's taking good attended people who are your average pro-lifer, and it's even taking advantage of them. And that's just really sad, because when a lot of people hear this message, they start getting it. They're like, man, you're right. You're like, we really have to do this. We've kind of been taken for a ride, and we need to demand more of our, you know, what we're doing as a church, talk to our pastor about this, not support these bills, you know, maybe go to the state house and listen to this legislation that's being proposed. You know, anybody can go when a pro-life piece of legislation or an abolition bill is presented. It's open to the public, and you can go and have your, whatever your state allows, whether it's 3 minutes, it's 5 minutes here in Ohio, and give your testimony and give your, you know, feelings on the bill. More people need to be involved in demanding better of our lawmakers.
Yeah. So I wanted to read this here from Humboldt Clay, and that's, we should be as outraged with abortion as we would be if they legalized murdering one-year-olds.
Right.
And absolutely correct. And we're going to get back to this in just a moment, because I've got my next line of questioning here. But
interrogation.
My interrogation. Yeah. Oh, this Let is great. This is a great show so far. I'm absolutely loving this. Okay, so Chris, put myself. I don't know how I put myself back on the screen. Andrew knows how to do this.
Articles or books.
thank you. Okay, so. So Chris writes this, and I think I can answer this as well. What good articles or books or lectures that discuss why SCOTUS, Supreme Court of the United States decisions, aren't law, would you recommend? Let me tell you what I would recommend. Any 12th grade government book that is taught across the country, because if we understand government, we understand that our executive branch enforces laws, our legislative branch makes the laws, and judicial branch is supposed to interpret the laws. The judicial branch is not to be making laws. And unfortunately, for many, many decades now, they have weaned power for themselves, especially the Supreme Court has, in almost making laws from the bench by the way that they're writing decisions. It's actually completely criminal. And judges that do that really should be imprisoned for that.
Right. And if we could tie that back to the pro-life movement, that's enforced that view of we have to wait for SCOTUS. We have to wait for these judges to do something about it. That's enforced that belief that SCOTUS has all of this power and all of the cards are in their hands. When we have the three branches of government, they don't make laws. So it's been perpetuated. It's like, where does this ideology come from anyways? It's actually from the pro-life movement. Roe versus Wade, that's all we ever hear about. We got to wait for Roe. We got to wait for Roe. And I'm like, no, we don't.
Right.
Well, and this is on, I mentioned a couple weeks ago, but for folks to pick up, you've been saying this without, you know, abortion is not legal. It's not a law.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
It is a Supreme Court or a court decision. It's not a law. The legislature has never voted on abortion to make it legal. Right, that's why we talk about Roe versus Wade. Now we had Biden saying that he wants to do that. Okay, yeah. You know, let's see that. We do have someone backstage here, Stephanie. Here, we'll bring her in, see if she has a question. Hello, Stephanie.
Hey.
How are you?
Hi.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Stephanie.
What you got?
This doesn't have a lot to do with abortion. I had a Jehovah's Witness friend. He quit work recently, so I highlighted a bunch of things in the Jehovah's Witness Bible that I thought contradicted his religion. Mostly, I wanted to ask a question. I know in Revelations they say you can't add or subtract from the Bible, but I had like a crazy idea about a religious fiction novel, and I didn't know what's appropriate.
Ah, okay. So, okay. So
is religious fiction appropriate ever?
Yeah, that's fine. That's not adding to the Bible, first off. says one thing to realize that in Revelation, and so Sarah, we take any questions. So it's, you know,
you're fine.
So,
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. We just might not have told Sarah that at the beginning. So one thing to realize with Revelation is when you see that the adding and subtracting, that's not the only time we see something like that in Scripture. It's three separate times in Scripture. An interesting thing with it, it's at the end of each of a period of writing of new Scripture, because there were periods of silence. So what we have there is the fact of if you're going to write something that is a fiction, you know, our friend here, Matt Slick, who's a friend of the show, he's written a novel called The Influence. It deals, and he's trying to teach angels and theology throughout his book. He's not adding to Scripture. So that wouldn't be a problem. That wouldn't violate that instruction.
Okay.
And the idea of that instruction is the fact that only God could add to Scripture. Like, so you can't add a human book like the Book of Mormon or the Quran or the Talmud or any of those things and call it Scripture.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah, so speaking of the Jehovah's Witness friend, I highlighted a bunch of passages. He was like, when he quit, he said he didn't want to accept a Bible from me. And I said, it's a Jehovah's Witness Bible. And he said, okay. But I highlighted a bunch of things, like Isaiah 9. Isaiah 9:6, for to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. And they did not omit that from the newest version. And I highlighted that. Guess what? You called him God. And I hope he's upset about that.
Well, let me give you real quick a couple passages you could go to with him. If you'd run into him again, Jeremiah 23 and verse 5. And what you do is have them read, even in their translation, verse 5. I'm going to read it out of New American Standard, but it says, "Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I will raise up for David a righteous branch, and he will reign as king and act wisely and do justice and righteousness in the land." And I stop there and say, who's that speaking of? And they always say, Jesus. I say, oh, okay. In his days, Judah will be saved and Israel will dwell securely. And this is his name by which he will be called Jehovah Sikkenu or Yahweh Sikkenu, the Lord our righteousness. In their own translation, it will say Jehovah there. So that's one that you can use. The other is if you take them to First Colossians 1 and you can take them through where it talks about they're going to have in their translation where in Colossians 1:14-18 it says he created all things. They're going to add the word other, all other things.
Other things, yes.
So,
hey, God.
Correct. What you do is point out that they've added the word other for their theology, but make sure you take them to Isaiah 44:24. And the reason for that is this is what Isaiah 44:24 says. Thus says the Lord, your Redeemer, and the one who formed you from the womb, I am the Lord, and I, the Lord, am the maker of all things, stretching out the heavens by myself and spreading out the earth all alone. And so the important thing there is they're going to say that God, the Almighty God, Jehovah, created Michael the Archangel who became Jesus, and Jesus then created everything else. So they'll say God created through him. That's not what Isaiah says. Isaiah says that he stretched everything out by himself, and he made it all alone. So that means that there couldn't be a Michael that created everything. Okay.
I did email you about this, and I have a list of everything I highlighted in this Jehovah's Witness Bible for him. So
oh,
I
good.
Hope to send it to you.
Good.
But thank you for having me. I didn't expect to just be popped on.
These are our office hours. If you ever have questions, you know, this is when you can always get a hold of one of the three of us, hopefully, would be here. Yep. So. All right, I'll put you backstage, and if you have any other questions, you can just put it in the private chat, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thanks
so
for coming
much.
In, Stephanie.
Thank you. All right. Well, that was fun.
One thing I want to say about the Roe thing too is when we're talking about Roe versus Wade, if it would be overturned, that doesn't mean it makes abortion like it's just criminal and illegal because it's overturned. It kicks the issue right back to the states, which is where we are right now to begin with. It's an unnecessary middle step that we just don't need. Hopefully that makes more sense too for the people that are still confused about Roe, because that's all you hear on a lot of these pro-life movement things is waiting on that court.
Well, I think that's a pretty powerful discussion on that when you're talking about it, because if you think about it, they're trying to bump it up. Their responsibilities in the state, what they should be doing, they're trying to bump it up to the Supreme Court saying, oh, we can't do anything. Our hands are tied by the federal government.
Yeah.
Well, the state and local laws are sitting there that are making it possible for these abortion clinics. I use clinic loosely, you know, it's the murder mill. Mm-hmm. They're using these state and local laws and lawmakers and they're using them to promote their cause while saying their hands are tied. There's all kinds of different degrees of that. And some of them, you know, some states are extremely pro-abortion and other states are moderately pro-life, I guess you'd call it. Let me ask this. Is there any state that you can think of that is truly pro-life, that would be truly standing for the rights of an innocent baby?
Well, we've had abolition bills, actually legit abolition, solid Christian Bible-based equal protection bills introduced throughout the country. I think we're up to 12 states now that we have some righteous legislation put forward to establish justice. And so if you look at the Free the States Facebook page, or we have freethestates.org, a lot of the information is on there. And you can scroll back through, particularly a Facebook page, even looking at videos. One thing that we do is we do a lot of reporting. We do a lot of, don't just take my word for it here. Let's go and, you know, like citizen journalism and investigate, listen to hearings, listen to what the legislators are saying, listen to what other people who have power are saying. And we brought up Jeff Durbin before. I mean, he had Tony Lowinger on. I don't know if you guys saw that video. If you know who Tony Lowinger is, he's the vice president of National Right to Life. He also happens to be the president of Oklahomans for Life. And he lobbied against SB 13, our abolition bill. And so when you talk about the pro-life states, Oklahoma is the most pro-life state in the union. And we couldn't get our abolition bill out of committee by Republican pro-lifers. So that's actually an argument that people use against this, say, see, abolition doesn't work. You can't even get it through committee, you know? And so what I say to that is you keep going back, though. You keep going back. And what it did, though, because we had that documented, that we had a bill that a lot of people supported and were like, oh, well, we're going to have this happen because my legislature, my senator is pro-life, so he's going to vote for it. And then they voted against it. They're like, well, what's going on here? You said you were pro-life, and here's a bill to actually protect all the babies, and you're against it? So it's awakened a lot of people, a lot of churches in particular. And if you guys saw what happened at the Southern Baptist Convention recently, this is the abolition movement coming forth, and big changes are happening. I don't know if that answers your question, but we don't have an abolitionist state yet. I believe in the future that we are going to have safe places for babies. We're going to probably have anti-abolition states and abolition states. So like when we had the North and the South and going through all that and freeing the slaves, it was a geographical like line of here and here. I don't know really what that's going to look like if we have it kind of checkered all throughout. I really don't know. That's just something that I trust in the Lord. All I know is what our duty is, what we're supposed to be doing as Christians and demanding justice and saving these babies, and then how it's all going to play out, I don't know.
Yeah. I worry about that, to be honest with you, just because, you know, as I stand in front of, as I have stood in front of the abortion mill up near us, I've actually seen deacons and pastors and others sneak in, you know, children, kids, that have, you know, been involved in some sexual activity, and they sneak them into the abortion clinic and to murder these babies. And I see that within the body of Christ, we have a lot of people that are satanically duped into believing the lie. They believe that it's okay to live your life your way, and that the, you know, that God's really not going to be that big of a judge against this this wickedness that's going on. And I think it's in the church itself, and that's where we're seeing the struggle here. So, you know, sure. You know, KT pointed out just a while ago that the greatest need that we have is the gospel. It's the gospel of Christ. It's the proclamation of the truth, the word of God. And it doesn't matter if we stop abortion in every context, in every situation, 100% across the board for every person in America. And it never happens again if every single person that is involved in this movement or not involved in this movement, if they stand before Christ without him being their savior, what happens to them?
Right.
You know, that's the point. You know, the issue is, while this is a strong issue, you know, I know a lot of people that stand at the abortion clinics and they will fight for that truth. And I thank God for them.
Right.
Because these people, you know, as vile as they are, they need to know. Those abortion mill doctors, they need to hear that truth.
So I want to kind of change the subject slightly because I know we got somebody who wants to come in.
Yeah, we have someone backstage that we want to bring in. So
yeah, but before we do that, okay. I want to just rifle through a couple things pretty quick with you, Sarah. First, are you okay with the sled? I mean, I know you. We've talked about this, but are you okay with the sled argument being used, the one that Scott Klusendorf put forward in terms of how we argue? Now, obviously, the abolitionist movement and in a biblical position is that it's a baby from conception, human life from conception, and that you're murdering a baby in abortion, so it should be criminalized. Okay, so we get that as our baseline. Now, as we argue our position about this being a human being, if there are, you know, abortionists that are still arguing it's a clump of cells, we can use something like the slut argument. Is that an okay argument in that instance?
Sure. I mean, science is going to agree with us. Science agrees with the Bible. I mean, medical technology, sometimes it takes a while to catch up, but we know the Bible's our foundation. So sled, probably most of viewers probably know what sled is, or if you want to go down through that, it just talks about the size, level of development, the location of the baby, all of those things that people use to justify abortion, say, well, it doesn't really matter because the baby's really small. And so we just talk about how size of a human being doesn't matter. The smaller the person really should be more protected, not less protected. So you can use their arguments and talk about those things and just kind of break them down. And sometimes it's using those things that opens their eyes to these bigger things and they're more willing to listen. So I'm not particularly against it. I just don't think that, just trying to explain to somebody that this is actually a baby, is the whole answer, because there's a lot of people that are for abortion that fully recognize all of those things and know it's a baby and they're still for abortion. So you can try to convince them and use sled and use like the humanity of the baby and all that stuff, but they still think it's okay to do. So it does come down to the gospel issue and a heart issue. You can argue science all day long and show them a million different ultrasounds. They're like, yep, I still think that's okay to have an abortion.
And amen to that. And we won't go through the whole slut argument, but it's size, level of development, environment, and degree of dependency.
Yeah.
Is what that argument is. Okay. So moving on from that, and for those of you who are watching the video, it was put up by I think Justin that conception continues life. So Justin, and I think Justin disagrees with Andrew and I about when life begins. He thinks in the Mormon position
we have it right.
Andrew agrees with me.
Yeah. or you agree with me since I'm older, but and I had the argument. I've held to it before you, so you have to.
Oh, stop it! You try to say that all the time.
So,
the argument is that theologians on both sides of that issue
at conception. Okay, at conception is when life begins. So it's not the issue is not that, because some of the people will argue that life begins at birth. I did think it was funny when they were challenging Hillary Clinton on this. When exactly does life begin? She's like, at birth. Well, when? Like when the feet come out, when the head come out? When, like,
magical birth canal.
Yeah.
Have you ever looked at Choice 42? Laura Clausen out of her little satirical videos kind of mocking these ideas, because some ideas deserve to be mocked because they're ridiculous. So it's a magical birth canal. Come through here and you're a human. Before that, not a human.
You just weren't. Yeah.
So,
Because the real question is, when do we get that immaterial part of us, the spirit, that immaterial part? That's the question. And that comes at conception.
Well, we're created in the image of God. We're not birthed in the image. I mean, we are birthed. I mean, we're living. We are, image of God. We're image bearers right now. But the scripture says we are created in the image of God, not, some arbitrary point in our life. When we're 3 months old, birth or whatever, just pick a spot. It's all arbitrary. Why birth? Why not? You talk to people on campus and they don't think that babies are really cognitive, worthwhile human beings until they're three. I mean,
yeah, but here's the thing. So let's take that argument, right? Mm-hmm. You have that person that said, 'cause that's what David Smalley tried to argue with me with that clip we played at the very beginning. And what do we deal with? The thing that we have to realize is, okay, but when you talk about slavery, how did they justify it? Well, it's not really a human being.
Yeah, it's not really human.
It's not really human. So we can they're just property. Once you dehumanize them.
Even the courts start to say, okay, we'll agree with you, it's human, but you know what? We're going to say 3/5 of a person.
Correct.
That's why they say that the heartbeat bill is the issue. They'll say, well, if we can get it at the heartbeat, what a heartbeat is and this, that, and the other. And that's why I've always contended, according to the scripture, life doesn't begin at conception. It continues on at conception. From the scripture, we see that, God breathed the breath of life into Adam and Eve. And every one of us from Adam and Eve, we come from him, from them. And we see that every single living soul that has come after them, Adam and Eve, have been alive from the moment, from the moment they were conceived and then beyond. And that's why I argue against the heartbeat bill, because it's just trying to push the life issue down, a few weeks.
I mean, even if outside abortion mills, there's all these kinds of reports because the heartbeat bill is so popular the last couple of years. And, women come in for abortion and they're really early pregnant and they're like, it's not like my baby has a heartbeat right now anyway. Like, who's training them to think that way?
Yeah.
Like, to dehumanize their own baby. A lot of this stuff, exactly. Like what I'm saying, this ideology, it's being perpetuated by not the pro-aborts.
Yeah.
Some of this bad stuff that's being, it's from the pro-life movement and these bills. And I'm like, well, heartbeat doesn't matter, you still have a baby. And they're like, well, I mean,
see, Anthony, that just so you understand what Justin was saying there, it's not that he has the Mormon view that all of spirits were created and put in. Well, there are people that hold Judaism, modern Judaism holds this same with Mormons, that God created all the spirits within the first 5 days, and then we're just sitting there waiting to get bodies. That's not what he was saying. His point is the fact that in procreation, God has put within procreation the creation of spirits. So we do have someone backstage. We have Chris backstage. Well, you have a couple things you want to get
to. Him,
yeah, you have a couple things questions. You want to get to, and you have 15 minutes.
Yep, two other quick questions. Three quick questions. Okay. So, Sarah, so let's talk about the two biggest objections out there right now. Okay. So we've established really good ground in terms of our position as an abolitionist. Mm-hmm. What about when somebody says, first of all, ectopic pregnancy?
Okay.
How do we answer that?
That was it. Okay.
Yeah.
What about ectopic pregnancy? First of all, abortion facilities do not treat ectopic pregnancies. So if you hear anybody, if you're one of the ones that are outside mills, or, you hear people saying, well, I have to have an abortion because I've had an ectopic pregnancy, and they're making an appointment at 2:00 on Tuesday. If it's a real life-threatening emergency, something that's actually going to take your life, and it's like, stat, we have to take care of it right now, you're not going to be making an appointment to go and get that done, right? You're going to be treated in the ER. You're going to, if it's real life and death, you're in the hospital, first of all. You're not inside an abortion clinic. So those freestanding clinics, they're not needed for ectopic pregnancies. They don't treat them. Abortion facilities are designed to empty the uterus only, whether it's DNC or the dismemberment, to dilate the cervix and go inside the uterus. That's what they do. They do not treat tubes. They do not treat, so that's what an ectopic pregnancy is. This is a pregnancy outside the uterus. By definition, the abortion facilities cannot even touch that because they are aborting babies in the uterus, first of all. So they're not able to treat them. They're not real legit medical facilities. that can do that. Ectopic pregnancies are, they're not uncommon, but they're not very common. It does happen. And that just means that the pregnancy has implanted somewhere outside the uterus. So it can be a danger to the mother. So I'm not saying that every pregnancy is easy or there aren't complications or there aren't anything. Obviously, things happen all the time. There's preeclampsia. There's all kinds of reasons that mothers need intervention and help when they're pregnant. So, but there's never a justifiable reason to still murder that baby. When we talk about ectopic pregnancies, which, you know, in my years of scanning, I saw just a handful of them. I just saw maybe 12 or 13 within the 9 years that I worked at the hospital. So just a little bit more than one per year. Now, I didn't, you know, work 40 hours all of those years, but it's rare, but it does happen. The vast majority of the time, by the time the mother is symptomatic, which is a lot of times spotting or localized pain to one specific area over where the ectopic pregnancy would be, by the time she's having symptoms, the vast majority of the time, the baby has already passed away at a microscopic, very small level. These aren't like big kicking babies and we're all, you know, having to abort them and dismember. Like, it's, that's not that. We're talking about something very, very small, and it's implanted in a place where it's never meant to be, and there's not life-sustaining endometrium or things there to sustain that life. And most of the time that baby passes away on its own. However, when those fetal cells or those embryonic cells stop growing, there's other cells that are involved in the pregnancy. There's chorionic villi that are going to turn into the placenta later. There's blood products. There's all kinds of things going on in this newly created life that are still moving and turning and all those things. And it's in a very elastic or non-elastic tube that's not meant to expand. It's not a uterus. It's just this tiny little tube, and it's very vascular, and it can rupture and burst. So we're talking about these fast moving cells, even though this baby, it's not a normal pregnancy. It's not a normal gestational sac. It's abnormal. We still have to treat that because the tube could still very well rupture and cause internal bleeding of the mother. That's why we still treat ectopic pregnancies. Most of the time, I can't say ever 100% because you don't always want to say always or never in these cases, because there's always exceptions to exceptions. But the vast majority of the time, ectopic pregnancies, they're not living babies that we're removing. We're just, it's more like removing a miscarriage, to be honest. And I think that there's a lot of unnecessary guilt and misunderstanding with a lot of women who have been through ectopic pregnancies that maybe have been wrestling with this and thinking that they gave permission for a doctor to remove or attack their living baby is just in the wrong place, and that's not the case. So we need to do a lot better in the medical community about explaining what ectopic pregnancies are, what they're not, and taking the time to explain that, because that's a lasting thing that, you know, parents can have. So we cannot be legalizing or keeping abortion protected for these for an ectopic reason or any other reason. We can treat women with their ectopic pregnancies without actually killing the baby. Now, there's exceptions to exceptions, exceptions of what about the rare case where we do find a living baby in the tube? You know, what then? And there is something called watchful waiting where some doctors have done that. And again, we're talking about 6 weeks or 7 weeks. Hardly any babies really make it past that, because then it's just... Yeah. They just die.
So basically, they're all going to die. Is it possible that they can be re-implanted into the uterus?
There's some debate of that. Some people say yes, some people say no. I am not convinced that that is possible. I'm not ruling out technology. We have the technology to do crazy things now. I'm sure that if it was a dedicated, if we actually had the people and the desire to try to do that and actually make that a funded project, Sophie, I think that we could actually potentially do that. I don't think there's a lot of interest and money put into that right now, because the easy solution is just to just be done with it, right? There's no real drive to save some of these babies. And also the fact that, like I said, these babies come down the tube and implant in something where it's not supposed to be. And it's like, it attaches. It's not just like attached by one little like thread, right? It like buries itself in and attaches in there, gets mm-hmm. down in there and attaches. So if we would try to have, I don't know how they would do that, honestly, have the technology to kind of detach it and scoop it out, put it where it's supposed to go. That's its life sustaining source. That's like unhooking its right. Everything that's keeping it alive. It's eventually going to die, but how do you detach it to put it where it goes in the first place?
Yeah.
I just don't know.
And this is really good, because most people that follow the slut argument and read Scott Klusendorf's books he doesn't answer the ectopic pregnancies very well. And so that's why I've done my own research, and I approached you about this, what, a couple months ago, to get some hard, fast answers on this. So thank you for telling everybody about that.
Yeah. Real quick. Sarah says these things, folks, if you're not picking up on everything, she says things really quick, offhanded comments that are huge. And so I just want to highlight some of these things. You heard her mention the fact that these clinics where they do abortions, they're not medical clinics. Keep that in mind. There's a reason they're not medical clinics, because they don't want to hold the abortion clinics to the same standard that they would have to do for a medical clinic. Okay. Mm-hmm. It is very interesting. I worked with a crisis pregnancy center in New Jersey where they were, the one thing I liked about them is they were there where people were abortion minded so that they could share the gospel. That was their mindset. But they actually are the only medical center in New Jersey that does full range of STD testing. It was interesting because for them to be able to just draw blood, they had to be held up to a medical standards. But here at these other clinics, they can put someone under, do a surgery, and they don't have to be held to the same standard. So, folks, I mean, I'm listening to you, and I'm just going, most of the people are not picking. You're saying so much, giving so much information.
I'm trying to get it in that, and that people, window you guys gave me. I could go on.
Andy wants to nix Anthony time tonight. If he wasn't wanting to nix Anthony time, we would be fine.
That's because other people have lives. They have things to do.
I know.
Yeah, Anthony doesn't have a life.
Part two. I can come back.
You guys can both get off the show.
We could do that.
You come back.
Actually, it'd be great to have you back, Sarah. Let me ask this question too. Are there any times where the mother's life is in danger that you have to terminate a pregnancy?
All the time.
Yeah.
That might shock you, but here's what, it doesn't mean that we have to murder the baby to terminate the pregnancy. Is that the same thing? Never.
I got to ask you a question to add on to his question.
Okay.
You only got 5 minutes. Okay. So here's 5 minutes to just answer the way. When you have this emergency where you have to go because mom's going to die, okay, they run to the abortion clinic and make an appointment.
Right. Yeah.
No, they go to a doctor, a real one. And I posted on here earlier. Most of these guys are not certified doctors. Yeah. They've lost their license, or it's relapsed, or they never were to begin
with. They're horrible. They're butcher shops. Well, even in the hospital, we can say, okay, we'll shut down all the freestanding abortion mills, and we'll just do abortions in the hospital where it's more sterile, and we have legit medical doctors doing it and stuff. That's going to be the answer to what we're talking about here, right? We'll just do the abortions then in the hospitals. But let me tell you this. Never in the 9 years when I worked in the ER did I ever hear the word say, quick, let's throw up the stirrups. We have an emergency abortion. We got to do it now. Yeah. It doesn't exist. It
doesn't happen.
It doesn't exist. Now, yes, there are high-risk pregnancies, all kinds of things that can happen during a pregnancy. But if a mother is pregnant, we know about it. She goes straight up to the mother and baby unit, and we put a monitor on the mom. We monitor her. We look at her heart. We look at her vitals. And what do we do to her belly? We put a monitor on the baby. And we say, okay, are you under stress, or what's going on here? And if there's an emergency situation that we have to end that pregnancy, terminate that pregnancy, an emergency C-section takes 20 minutes. If we have to emergently end that pregnancy, we take the baby out and we try to save both lives. Now, sometimes that baby's too sick, or sometimes the baby's too young, and those things happen, and that's very sad, and all of those things. But the intention is never to murder the baby, hurt the baby. The intention is to end the pregnancy to save the mother and also save the baby. So we don't need an abortion in the context of murdering the baby. In medical, we have these medical terms, and we say elective abortion and therapeutic abortion and all kinds of different abortions. Or we say spontaneous abortion for miscarriages in some paperwork or some radiology report. Sometimes they say spontaneous abortion, and a mother who just had a miscarriage gets a hold of that and is like, abortion. I'm like, spontaneous, that just means miscarriage. So we do have to define that. But there are emergency situations, to answer your questions, yes, that we have to terminate the pregnancy. But I want to make that very clear. We don't have to murder the baby or intentionally, especially if the baby is in the second and third trimester and there's an emergency situation, do you know how long it takes to dilate the cervix, get everything prepped, dismember the baby, do all that stuff? I mean, it takes 2 days sometimes to do all that kind of stuff. What kind of emergency procedure takes 48 hours? Yeah, that doesn't, it's not an emergency procedure where it's saving the life of the mother.
That's right. Yeah, no, that's a great point. So have you heard about a statistic that says breast cancer in females is higher among females who've had abortions in the past?
I've heard that.
I mean, that's a really interesting statistic out there. I'm looking forward to seeing more research on that type of stuff having to do with hormonal problems and the hormones not going away in the breast tissue the way it naturally would after pregnancy and being able to naturally breastfeed and whatnot. So
yeah, it just goes against the laws of nature. The laws of God is just unnatural. I mean, there, you know, to have an abortion, you have more scar tissue inside of your body. Women who have had abortions are more susceptible to STDs. And when they do want to have a baby and give birth, they have a lot of infertility problems, or their cervixes are incompetent and they have miscarriages. There's consequences to sin, and there's consequences. And it's just very sad. This, like I said before, this affects everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I'm going to ask one last one now before we bring Chris on.
You said three, you got your three. Chris is waiting.
It's you guys kept interrupting and adding more stuff. Okay. Roman Catholics, should we link arms with them or not?
Oh, depends on what we define our terms, what we're linking arms. Do we allow them? Do you know when, if we have an abolition bill and it's on the table and, we're voting for somebody who's an abolitionist, do we encourage all people to vote to get this person in office if they're running on an abolition platform? Absolutely. I think everybody should vote for that guy, whether they're a Christian or not, get that guy in there. I wouldn't consider that linking arms with somebody to try to get a good candidate in there that's going to abolish abortion. Now, as far as preaching the gospel, standing outside abortion facilities, preaching, having the word of God, speaking the truth to people, and then you have idols, you know, standing beside you or the rosary being prayed or something like that, I don't think that we should be linking arms and integrating that and being part. So we have to define what we mean by linking arms. You know, this is a no compromise kind of movement because we are standing on solid ground and with the word. So when it comes to those spiritual battles, we can't be mixing different religions in. But when we talk about, you know, if a Catholic wants to, you know, donate money towards, you know, I don't know, some of our signs that we make or something like that, I personally don't have any problem if they want to help me purchase the signs that I make or the lit. Maybe they're, I should say this, but maybe they're being a bad Catholic by doing that and not really following some of the things, the teachings. So yes, we can in some ways. I would be careful about the whole linking the arms thing, because always, you know, you always want to say like no right away. But like if there's a bill up for grabs, or if there's a legislator that is going to be in office, or if they want to donate, just as long as there's no strings attached, right? To that, we're not going to compromise the gospel in an effort to like take money or something. But I think we've had Catholics, like we don't vet everybody that who donates to like abolition missions projects or whatever. You know, we don't vet everybody where all the money is coming from. So if they want to donate $20 or something, if they're an atheist but they're against abortion, which doesn't make any sense to me, but those people, they say that they exist. I think that that's okay. But does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, and the thing is when you know, when I'm outside an abortion mill, the Catholics get the gospel too, because they need it. It's not, you know, they need the gospel just as much as that person going in.
Yeah.
So,
but we're not saying the rosary with them. That's correct. The linking the arms thing. We're not, you know, being all chummy and compromising and all that kind of stuff.
We can be out there for the saving of the child's life, but we make the distinction that we are not Catholic. They are not Christian. Okay. They need the gospel just as much as the people working inside the clinic, just as much as those who are going in the clinic.
Yeah.
So
the workspace salvation. I mean, that's what they think. And it does come down to, this isn't just an abortion issue. I mean, we're supposed to, as Christians, what is our role in this world, right? We're supposed to preach the gospel, make disciples, push back against evil, defy tyrants, all that kind of stuff. And it's a tyrannical ideology that is promoted. Thing, this killing of babies, it's all interwoven here. And I mean, preach the gospel to anybody and everybody.
So since Anthony likes to make us go over 10 o'clock, Now would be a good time to give, you know, mention our second sponsor, which is Logos Bible Software. If you guys are, some of you who attended the event we did last week, but if you haven't, and if you want to get good Bible software, it's it can be expensive, but that's you can get a lot of books on your computer, do a lot of study. It will greatly help you if you have good tools to interpret the Bible. And so if you want to get Logos Bible software, you haven't used it, or you want to upgrade, you can get it with through us as a partnership that we have with Logos. I gave you the shorter link. They give us a really long link, but just go to bit.ly/SFELogos. LOGOS. Just go to there, and you can not only get a discount on a upgrade or a purchase of Logos, but you can also get yourself 5 free books from Striving for Eternity. So with that, I'm going to bring Chris in. Chris, welcome.
All right, thank you. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
What's your question tonight?
Okay, I actually have a couple or whatnot. So I guess kind of going back to earlier topics that we came across tonight. So let's go back to Scott Klusendorf. Now, several years ago, I came across him, and I thought he was, at the time, I thought he was a respectable guy in regards to apologetics on the abortion issue. But it seems like the last few months or so, he's been coming after the idea of abolition and that sort of thing. And I know that he's done a lot of good work over the years, but how should we approach him now that, especially with that Desiring God article he did a few months back or whatnot, how should we approach him at... I would call myself an abolitionist as well, yeah, in that regard.
Yeah. I mean, I can answer that. I know Scott. He knows me. Abby Johnson knows who I am. Kristen Mercer Hawkins, some of these people, they don't like me. They don't. But I'm friendly with Scott. He defriended me a couple years ago because of the movement, and even some legislation, people that have promoted that here in Ohio. Former senators and things, what they do a lot of times is they do, as you've seen, they kind of expose themselves. They'll come out against abolition or different things, and it's like, why would you do that? Like, he was against the SBC resolution, and he said that it was a bad idea, that he wasn't for it. And so how we approach him, just like anybody we disagree with, we still, if we know we're right, we know we are, we don't compromise with that. And you don't be jerks to him. You don't say how wrong or awful he is. How I approach things is I always, he has done good things. Even like live action Lila Rose, she has some things wrong, but she's done a lot of good things too. And I always say, listen, I appreciate this work and this video that was made and things like that. I can share talking about linking arms with Catholics. Catholics have made really good life-affirming kind of videos and things like that. That's fine. But as far as Scott Klusendorf, I would sit down with him and have lunch with him any day of the week, and or have a conference call with him and hash this out. He claims, you know, he's a Christian. And as brothers and sisters in the Lord, we should be able to have these conversations and be persistent with them. I've talked to lots of people over the last years that like, oh, those mean abolitionists, or they're crazy, or they're just fanatical people. But we keep planting these seeds, and we keep, you know, preaching this message and talking about this. And eventually, just like when you plant seeds, sometimes it starts to grow. And I mean, Troy Newman, if you know who that is, I mean, I have him. I'm in constant contact. I want to say constant. I'm in contact with him. And he's hearing this abolition message too. And it may be slower for some people, but they're hearing it and they're getting it. So I would just be persistent with him and loving with him, and don't compromise the message. But just continue to have him look into what we're saying, because I think that hopefully, prayerfully, he'll get it one day. That would be a fantastic, fantastic thing.
Yeah, because especially that Desiring God article, like, obviously don't have time to go over that right now. I'm not asking you to do that, but does he have accurate understanding of the abolition movement, or does he do a lot of straw men?
Who's that, Scott?
Yeah, Scott.
I think... I don't want to get into too much speculation, because it could get kind of sticky there, why people do the things that they do. And I'm assuming, like, does he really get it? Does he not? I mean, I'd be presuming some things. I think that there are some people in the pro-life movement who absolutely do get it, who are just, it's a pride issue, and they're very stubborn. And if they've been in the movement for years, they would have to admit that they've been wrong. That's hard for anybody to do, right? You mess up one day or one thing, let alone if what you've built maybe really wasn't what you thought it was or something. Mark Harrington here in Created Equal, he's a friend of mine. I don't not like any of these people. I think what some of the things that they're doing are very wrong and detrimental to the cause and abolition. But I would sit down with any of these people and plead with them and just show how sincere and honest I am. Like, I sincerely want them to see it too. Mm-hmm. Not that the Lord needs any one of us to do what he's going to do.
True.
But somebody in the pro-life movement to come out of that, and we've had people active, and I don't know if you guys know this about me, I didn't say this at the beginning, but I was with CBR, I was with the Center for Bioethical Reform for a year, and I actually volunteered for some pro-life organizations. I was kind of like the redheaded stepchild. I never really fit in, but I didn't really know my role, and I kind of ruffled feathers a little bit when I was working in that movement. But I've met Lila Rose, I've met like Paul Ryan, I've been to DC and had these fancy dinners and things. So I know kind of some of the inner working and how easy and appealing it can be to be sucked into a lot of this stuff. And then to get out of it would be a hard thing. So we just need to pray for these guys that they see the truth and that they'll start fighting for abolition and not regulation.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, because I'm down here in Oklahoma or whatnot, and I've actually, like, last couple of years down here in Oklahoma City, they've actually had like rallies from Free the States that have actually helped.
There you go.
Had an interesting conversation with one of my legislators in regards to one of the SB 13 bills in that regard.
Well, thank you for going and being involved in that.
Yeah, most definitely. I'm really glad I did that, and I hope to do that more in the future as well.
Yeah, get connected with the team down there. We got a great team. And I mean, it's not all serious all the time. Obviously, this is really heavy and serious matter, but we are brothers and sisters, and we do joke around. We're just, you know, fun people too, and just get connected with the team down there, and I think you'll really appreciate what we're doing down there in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I agree. I have a lot of respect for the people down here in that regard. Right. One last question I do have. Yeah. Back to like the ultrasounds, you know, we talked that was brought up earlier or whatnot. I know a while back on Wretched Radio, there always used to be commercials for pro-life organizations saying that if a mother sees an ultrasound of the baby, there's an 8% chance that she keep the baby. Mm-hmm. Is there any truth to that statement at all?
Yes. Okay. However, what's the setting that they are using that stats from? I mean, inside a pro-life, if abortion-minded women came to me and I did ultrasound and explained everything and preached the gospel, did all this kind of stuff, I'd probably have a lot higher saves or success rate of saving that baby than somebody who is seeing an ultrasound inside an abortion clinic where they're not going to do the same thing. So what's the environment that they're going to, who's doing the ultrasound? I don't know that it is that high or 80%, but a lot of women who go to see their babies inside like these mobile units and these pregnancy centers, they, like I said earlier, they already, most of them, a lot of them do already have their hearts softened to this, and they see the ultrasound, and that's a different environment than going inside of an abortion clinic. We're not going to save 80% of all babies at risk of abortion by making ultrasound laws inside abortion mills.
Okay,
does that make sense?
It does, because I remember hearing that because 80% was the advertised number, and it's basically the point of the ad was like, well, if 80% of the time the mother keeps the baby or whatnot, now therefore you have to, like, if you give like $20 or so, then $16 of that will go to saving babies and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
so I wasn't sure if that was an advertising.
There's some organizations, I think Let Them Live and Save the Storks, and there's some other organizations that I've actually put out. If you donate $20, that goes to, it only takes $20 to save a baby or something like that. I'm like, I don't know where they come up with that. Or like, there's actually certain rosaries that if you pray on a certain rosary, it's supposed to save a baby from hell or something like that. Like, I've seen all kinds of crazy things. I mean, it's an industry, just like we have the pro-abortion complex industry that just builds, you know, Planned Parenthood and all these organizations. We do have the pro-life movement complex too, that just, it's an industry.
Exactly. And that's actually why I prefer using the phrase pro-life industry in that regard too, because that's one of the reasons why I support like the end abortion. I mean, I agree with the end abortion now and the States people, just because they're metaphorically trying to work themselves out of a job in that regard versus the people like it and the executives and pro-life movement. Right. They care about their jobs and their income. And if abortion's illegal and criminal, they'll be out of the job and they don't want that.
Oh, believe me, we'll take, you know, if somebody says, you know, we'll say it's $20 helps us make these drop cards. You could say something like that, but I don't know how anybody can say $20 saves a baby. You know, what we do, we have, I know it's like 10 o'clock. Somebody asked about, if you just put this up here, these materials, this is some of the stuff that we have made. This actually you can get on the website. Again, we really don't make any money off this stuff. We write all this stuff ourselves and the artwork. This is a booklet. I think it's only, maybe 17 pages long or 22 pages long, but this breaks down the difference between the abolition movement and the pro-life movement. You can get this on the Free the States website. I'm an ultrasound tech, as you guys have been hearing about the last 2 years. That's actually my 7-year-old, right? Let me point to the right one here. That's my 7-year-old. She's now 7-year-old daughter that I took a picture of myself when I was pregnant there, and we've used that in the pamphlet. So that's still her in the womb, right? So this breaks down a lot of what we've discussed tonight in a really neat little just booklet, and you guys can get this. This is great for churches or really anybody. We also make these quad folds, Are the Churches Guilty Again? And it talks about, you know, did you know that there were over 50 million church-going Christians in Nazi Germany who did nothing to stand against Hitler's culture of death? It's kind of boom, you know, and then you flip it up and it's, there's a graphic image in the middle. So I don't know exactly who's watching, but we make things like this as well. Drop cards. There's all kinds of things that people can do. If you're not comfortable explaining some of this stuff, you know, work on your apologetics, but you can always be giving people information and learning and talking about it. You just check out that website. That's awesome. I also want to plug this, you guys, from Matt Truella, The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates. Talk about when you have tyranny and oppression in the higher, the courts and the federal government and even the states, at the state level, what is the duty of the lesser magistrates? We're talking about commissioners and sheriffs and just your local representation, how we're supposed to interpose for people who are being oppressed and even murdered. And this is a great book talking about defying unjust court opinions and all that kind of stuff. So definitely check that out. That's The Doctrine of the Lesser Magistrates. So that'll help you guys. And of course, the website has more information. You guys can read up on that. Find me on Facebook. I just really just appreciate getting all this information out there. And End Abortion Now, they do great work over there as well.
Yeah, well, we definitely appreciate you coming on. I think it would be good to have you back. We could discuss a lot more stuff. And, you know, we had the website up there. I know some people are saying they're going to go check that out. So that would be good. KT is saying here, 180 movie is good for sharing with people. And there's a lot of things we could do. The thing, though, that we can't do is nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. That's right. Something we can't do. And so, you know, so the question is, should everybody be outside in an abortion mill? I would say not everyone's called to do that, right? Because we all have different, we're all gifted differently. We're all have different type of days. Some people can't do that with their jobs, but that doesn't mean there's not other things that we can all be doing. You know,
we all have gifts and different things we can bring to the table, whether it's financially giving to some of these projects, printing our materials, or anything like that, artwork, praying for people. But I do want to say, well, I pray for you guys and we do appreciate that, but we're also human beings created to act and go do. And it's going to take a lot more than just asking the Lord to end this. I mean, ultimately he will, but he expects something of us, and we are responsible for what we know. And we have to do something. Everybody has a role in this, and everybody has something the Lord would want them to do about this. Our neighbors are being murdered, and we're supposed to love our neighbors as ourselves and love the Lord, and this is part of it.
Yeah. So Anthony, thanks for setting this up. I think this was a good discussion. I think, folks, if you can check out more that with Sarah, because like I said earlier, you know, I'm listening to her, and having been involved in stuff, I'm listening to things she's saying just kind of off the cuff, and she's rattling through so much information that I'm going, like, I just keep wanting to stop and say, wait, did everyone pick up on this? I do encourage you, go back, listen to this podcast again, watch the video again, until you really start to see everything that she was saying. There's a lot there, a lot more than I think you may be listening to her and may have missed a whole bunch of stuff that she actually is saying, and you want to dig into some of this. So, Sarah, we thank you for coming in. you know, Melissa is saying there, one thing we can always do is share the gospel. That is something we can do. Right. Folks, if you want to help us continue to do this, you can always support us. Go to strivingfraternity.org/support. That's how you can support us doing programs like this. We thank you guys for coming on. Sarah, we thank you for joining us and informing us on a whole lot of things. Anthony, I don't know if you have anything else you want to say before we close out.
No, that's it. Thank you. I mean, we'll have to figure out a time that we can get you back on, Sarah. And,
okay.
And,
anytime. And as you can see, I can talk all night about this. Yeah. There's a lot more to share, too. But yeah. I do want to end on, you know, people that are watching that have been involved in abortion and maybe aborted their own baby, is to say that there is forgiveness in Christ. And mm-hmm. if you are not right with the Lord and you have not yet repented of that, you need to do that and get right with Him. And there's nothing too big that the Lord cannot just wash clean. You know, there's no sin too big. Even the sin of murder. And so just come to the Lord with that tonight, if that is something that has affected you. And like I said, you can reach out to any one of us if you need to talk about that too. But we worship a wonderful Savior.
That's right.
And so yeah. We're here. If you've been involved in an abortion and you need help with that.
So next week, we don't have anything set up yet for next week. I will say that reaching out to Jason Lyle, we may have him come on if we can work out a date. Talk about flat Earth. Yes. Ooh. That's you know, you discuss that with, you know, someone that looks at stars all day, right? But
yeah, they do that in UFOs.
Yeah, so we'll have to get Matt Slick on if we're going to talk UFOs.
What's the other guy?
Huh?
I bet Jeff Bezos. What's the other guy's name? Branson.
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson. Well, they now don't believe in a flat Earth anymore. If they wanted to.
Yeah. So we may have the reason we're trying to work this out is. You know, friend of the show here, you guys have seen him in the past, Justin Peters, actually has someone who is a reasonable flat earther that we're going to try to get a discussion going between. That's how Justin explained
him. He made me laugh.
I think he means reasonable, meaning that the guy's not just like, you know, he can actually hold a discussion, not one of these guys that just tries to talk over you to convince you he's right. That's what I think Justin means by it. But we're going to try to see if we could set that up. Some people were asking about getting Andrew Snelling in, Anthony, so I'm going to put that up to you to see if you can get that worked out. Maybe we can have him on the show.
And if not him, there's other geologists. I know he's hard to get, but there's other geologists I could get a hold of. I'll be out in the Pacific Northwest coming up here in a few weeks at a church in Portland, a church in Seattle, and in between I'll be going to the Mount St. Helens Creation Center. It just so happens, run by Pat Roy, it just so happens they're having the 40th anniversary plus one because of COVID.
Because COVID.
40th anniversary celebration. And so I just found out today, Eric Hoven reached out to me. He's going to be out there. So I think we're going to do a video out there together. And Steve Austin's going to be out there, and a few other guys. Steve Austin was one of the guys who was originally filming the eruption 40 years ago, which led to a lot of what we know as creationists and in our ability to refute stuff with the Grand Canyon. So if we can't get Andrew.
Isn't that like a wrestler? Like a WWE?
Yeah, well, there's a wrestler.
Yeah, wrestlers in here?
Yeah. It'd be cool if he was the wrestler, Steve Austin. No, but so he might be a great guest to have on, too, to talk about some of those same things. So
yeah.
I'll be able to see him face-to-face in a few weeks.
All right. And so I don't know what we will have a show next week. It'll be good, whatever it is, I'm sure. You guys can always join and ask your questions. That always makes it a lot more fun. So we do thank those of you who came in. Thank you, Sarah, for coming in. And just remember to strive to make today an eternal day for the glory of God. And we'll see you next week.